Hello.
Welcome to Harley's Brunch.
That's right, Harley needs to eat. Add to group call. Well, that's an ugly sound. Woo-wee. I hate this new Skype. Why can't they keep things simple?
Morning, kids.
Good morning, sunshine.
How's it going?
All right. How are you
Good,
doing?
good. Good. It's nice to be back with you guys.
Yeah, how's the weather out there?
Oh, it's lovely.
Yeah, it's 60 degrees over here, man.
I don't know what the temperature is, but I don't know if Chris, if it fell, if any snow fell yesterday, but it started snowing again yesterday. I'm like, oh, perfect.
Yesterday morning a bit. It's
Yeah, but
30, it's 33 here.
it all melted away by the afternoon. I wasn't sure if
Most
it was
of it.
going to. I'm like, oh my God. We had
Yeah,
so much.
we had a snowstorm during the week.
Yeah, you know what they say, when the wind blows, the mothers talk.
Yep.
It
March
was the worst one
comes.
we've had up all winter, at least in my area.
Yeah, it's funny that it didn't come until March.
Yeah.
March is very iffy. March and first part of April here, it could be starting to get more like spring-like, but sometimes we have some late blasts of winter.
Or it could be global warming.
Or that too, yeah. Global warming making it
Oh, but
colder here.
wait! Our president says there's no such thing.
Well, then that must be true.
It must be
Yeah.
true.
Definitely.
It's crazy. I think that's what we're just gonna expect from now on. I think generally, Chris will probably get like milder winters as a whole, but then we'll periodically just get nailed with like crazy weather.
Yeah, it'll be August and you're getting a snowstorm.
Like you don't know, you just don't know, you know? It's just gonna be very I don't know what the word is, but like kind of like drastic, like extremes. It's gonna be like one extreme or the other.
And then somebody will release the frostbite virus.
Exactly. That was a good series.
Yeah.
Oh,
Well, I got a new winter jacket not that long ago, so I didn't mind that much because it gave me a chance to wear it.
yeah.
Because I'm quite the fashionista,
Yes,
so.
well, we know that.
But,
Quite the metrosexual.
yep.
What colors is it?
It's black.
Ah.
All black, no other colors. Just like my soul.
That's not true. So you guys all heard about poor Bernie, right, son?
Yeah. Yeah,
Very sad.
his health declined really fast that last year.
Yeah, very much so. I saw him a few years ago in Toronto, and I got a Swamp Thing print, and he signed it.
Yeah, that was
I'm glad I
about
got to meet him, but
there was about four cons that we saw him at, me and Barb. One of them here was local, and we talked
oh,
to him a lot, which was a hotel con, which is really weird.
yeah.
But his wife was selling like Bernie drawn bags, like bags where you could carry comics.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so we bought one of those for our friend because he's a huge fan.
Yeah. Yeah, it's yeah, sad. Just
Yeah.
he didn't been in poor health the past few years, but yeah, this last year just declined very quickly.
Well, it was recent, like 6 months ago, where he said he couldn't draw anymore. Do you remember
Yep.
that? He said, "I'm not going to be
Oh.
drawing. I'll sign stuff, but I won't draw."
Yeah. I'm not even
Yeah.
sure if it was a full 6 months ago. It might have been less. It's very
Yeah, it
quick.
could have been. It was very recent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Too bad.
How old was he?
Creator of Swamp Thing.
He's 68, so, yeah.
He's young, but he looked older than he was.
He looked very old. I know he had a lot of, what was it, brain issues, right? The strokes
Yeah.
and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, too bad. So what else is going on with you guys?
Not much. Same old.
Yeah.
Did Harley like her breakfast?
was it brunch? Yeah.
Yeah. Did she like it?
She hasn't eaten yet. Now she's not going to go outside. I took her. I barely got up in time because I had one of those things where I get up at like 3:30 a.m. and can't go back to sleep. So I read some comics, went back to bed, and then I couldn't get out of bed. And then Harley's lazy now that the time shift. And the only way I could get her up is she's like under the covers, is like to take all the covers off of her. And then she eventually makes it down. And then we went for our walk. And now she's supposed to eat, but now she's knocking to go out. Because it's warm. It's 60, which is really... We're having a weird winter, because usually in Colorado we get, you know, some pretty good snowstorms. We haven't had shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, seriously, we didn't have any... I'm north of the city. Chris, you're south of the city, right?
Yeah, or east, southeast, kind of.
So, like, north of the city typically gets less snow, but we literally... I didn't have any snowstorms at all until this one this past week. The entire winter. And January and February were very comfortable.
I have a feeling we'll get hit in April for sure.
Oh, God.
Like a good dump, like, I don't know, a foot, 2 feet.
That's too much for April.
Yeah, we've had some really late. We've had some really early, too, so who knows.
Mike, my wife wants to friend your wife on Facebook so they can commiserate and about not unruly, but issues with their spouse collecting too many comic books.
I think they call that.
There's nothing wrong with collecting comic books.
Comic book widows.
Why Rob's wife wants to talk to you about stopping your husband's from collecting comics. I already told you 62 and a half. You got a date.
What? You're going to stop collecting comic books at 62?
Yeah, 62 and a half.
Why?
Because that's when the downside comes and I got to start offloading shit.
Oh, really? Oh. I didn't give Stacy a date. She doesn't have a date.
Rob's
yeah, but you're still younger than me, right? Like almost
only
a decade?
Only by like 3. No, it's like 3 or 4 years.
I thought it was almost a decade.
How old are you? I'm 40. What year is this? I'm 45.
Ah.
Yeah. But will you be 48 this year?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're like 3 years older.
Well, I'm 48, right? I don't even know anymore.
I know.
I'm 47. I got it right. God damn.
It's hard to remember.
It's hard to remember when you like pass the 40 mark.
Yep.
It gets harder to remember.
Well, you don't want to remember.
I always add years onto it that they're not because the body starts falling apart.
But you know what? I'm just gonna pass them on to all the kids, and they can do whatever they want with them.
Now burn them up.
Well, I hope they don't do that. They should sell them.
Well, I think we're really close to. I think we're 5 years. I mean, this is Mike's prediction. I think we're 5 years away from the death of the direct market.
I don't think so. Why do you say that?
I'm seeing some.
I saw your post.
I'm seeing some weird trends on the sales figures, and they're not. All it would take is a DC Unlimited. Because then you have the big two, which are more than 80% of the market. And then everybody else will follow suit.
Yeah, but they're going to still publish comic books as well.
No, they'll always publish comics. I'm just talking about the direct market, which means paper.
You don't think they're going to make paper comic books anymore?
No.
Oh,
why are you crossing your fingers, Barb? Are you praying?
Is that the first time you ever saw her pray before?
Yeah.
And now she's praying.
She doesn't normally pray. That scares me.
I hope you're not. I hope you're not right. I enjoy my paper comic books.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if in our lifetime. I don't think it's going to happen tomorrow, but
5 years. That's my prediction.
I think it'll be more than that.
All it takes is for me to stop getting paper and the whole market crash.
Was I just going to tell you? I forgot.
Why do you think with Marvel's Unlimited series or service, I mean, doesn't seem like they've continued to be the top market share. Why do you think DC joining them would have such a huge impact?
I think it's such a huge impact because I think Marvel is purposely, and I can see this in their sales numbers, they're purposely forcing higher comic prices and such on there to make you go to the to Unlimited service. I think they want to drive people to it.
Oh.
Because I think the industry here's what I think. This is Mike on it. I think they're competing with themselves, and what I say is in different forms of entertainment. So the more movies come out, the more TV come out, they're competing for your time. They're competing for how many comics you can read. And they know that the money is not in the comics.
No.
The money is in selling commercials, the money's in their movies, their merchandising. The comics is kind of like what starts it all. Like, that's where everything starts. But I don't think it's also an aging. We're all getting older. We just said how old we are. Everybody's getting older. The hardcore collectors are getting older, which means they'll care less. But the market's changing, my friend. I could smell
it. Yeah. You'll have more people that are used to buying comics digitally.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you realize that, like, Marvel, every book, I mean, their highest selling book that's non-Star Wars is like 60K?
No. Is that right?
Yeah. And that's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So, I mean, their Star Wars franchises seems to be doing well, but their Star Wars franchise also has, and the other thing that I think is killing it is variant collector's editions and speculation. It's the 90s coming back, so I think it's getting to the point of implosion, and you can see this with like gimmicks like 1 in 500, 1 in 1,000, because there is demand for that, but that doesn't push books, that doesn't increase. That's the Valiant collector saying, oh, I want that metal cover because I'm a completist. It doesn't make the retailers sell more copies of XO.
Mm-hmm.
They could have more on the shelf. Like, he could have 500 copies. He's only going to sell five. And
right.
normally he only sells one. So he increases it by four copies and has 494 copies on the shelf. 95. Got to do my math.
Right, yeah. I mean, no, you're right. I mean, they're not going to customers, but Valiant is still selling that big number.
No, but those are returnable.
Oh. Well, if they're not, but are they for sure returnable? Like, everything's not.
Well, I don't know if they're for sure returnable. I know what they offered our retailer, because at our shop, we have one guy that gets Valiant. I don't get Valiant there. Because I get them through DCBS at 50% off.
Right.
But he gets, and he says, well, I want to make a deal with you for this 1 in 500. And he said, I could do it, but you're going to have to pay over $1,000.
Right.
Because he's also paying to store this shit until he can return it. But Valiant says, yeah, you can return it. 500 copies is a lot. That's not a 1 in a 50.
Right.
500 copies. And then you also get the people that want the Venom cover, which is 1 in 1,000, which is an old drawn Todd McFarlane sketch.
Yeah, I don't get that
and
at all.
It's like, what That's the just me. Fuck? They're purposely driving, I think. I think they know. There's not. these people are not stupid. their paychecks rely on it. Mm-hmm. They know what they're doing and where they're headed at the people in charge of the money.
Yeah, it's just strange to me that the people want
business. So their main goal is always going to be to make money, however that works out. I mean, I don't think that they're necessarily – they're just going to do what makes money. And unfortunately, like stuff like the variant covers and things like that are short-term solutions. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a house of cards, so you're going to make money in the short term, but you're relying on such a small percentage of the market that's actually going to – go in for those, that if those buyers disappear, then it all collapses quickly. It's not
you
like...
got it. The aging people. See, this it's all coming full circle. It's gonna happen. Like, comics will never go away. I just think it's gonna go the way of the, like, you go to, there's no music stores anymore. You can go to Target and still get a few CDs, but your selection is like, oh man, that's like the top 100 CDs or whatever is out, right?
Yeah, but
you used
but,
to have whole record stores like devoted to CDs, tapes,
but there's
vinyl.
Been a resurgence in vinyl though too. That's selling more than it ever has in the past like 20 years.
Yeah, but that's like still to me vinyl. Well, with the exception of my nephew, I think it's an older.
No, it's kids. It's like a retro thing.
Yeah.
That's why I don't see comic books on paper totally ever going away. It might be a very small amount, but
they'll be
I could
paper.
See them still
I think
publishing
that there'll be a lot less of it.
I think it depends on how long you actually mean by forever, you know, because everything is going to go away eventually.
Well, yeah, the earth will be devoured by the sun.
Yeah. And before that, we probably won't have like enough paper to waste paper on comic books.
I have plans for the apocalypse, though. I'm inviting Bill Bomer down, and I'm going to eat him.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
He's grass-fed.
Come down here for protection, and then we're having a barbecue. Eat him.
Wow. I don't know if that's Mike, you might want to pick one of your other friends that's, you know, got a little
that
more meat
a little
on
more
him.
Meat.
So, might
no,
not
but,
be the.
Hey,
he might not be the
like
best choice.
It's like eating the filet mignon cut instead of the fatty gristle cut.
Well, that's the thing. And Chris, you and Bill are grass fed, so you're going to taste really good.
Oh, okay.
Do you see?
Don't have a lot of junk in your system.
Yeah.
Well, just don't cook me alive. Just kill me before you.
See, it's you two that I that's why I'm podcasting with you guys. Me and Rob are going to eat you guys. I mean, Rob's the guy I could talk to. He eats like a donut the size of a tire wheel.
Oh, my God. Those
are... Just surprise me, you know.
Just surprise. You don't want to know ahead of time.
Don't let me know that it's about to happen and make it fast.
Yeah,
don't roast.
You're gonna
don't
need
roast
some
me
of
alive.
Because of the global warming, you're gonna need some of this suntan lotion. Why does this taste like smell like butter? Why has this got like a butter garlic smell to it?
Did you ever see that Seinfeld episode with Kramer?
Yeah, with Kramer.
Yes. Newman starts seeing him as a giant turkey.
I saw that Seinfeld play set. I posted it, and I was like, oh my God. If I had room, I'd have that. Because I love that show.
I just want to mention, like, did you see that report that they're reporting that DC is looking at an unlimited service through Amazon?
Yeah, that's what brought my.
That's where I kind of coming from.
That's
Mike.
What I figured. But you know, I do see, like, when you're talking about Chris, when you said like the variant thing is like a short term gain versus long. I wonder also. I sent an email to Ronnie and Jack, who do that Ultimate Marvel podcast, and they said they're going to talk about it on a future episode, but I've noticed that for the first time in many years, as far as I can remember, Marvel is changing over creative teams and aren't relaunching necessarily with new number ones. Like Uncanny Avengers is changing. There's three or four other ones Old Man Logan is changing. None of them are starting with the new number one. At the same time, I understand like the Guardians of the Galaxy are rebooting because the movie's coming out. But I'm wondering if they're just starting
the
to not to
just
see
rebooted. The, I mean, and, I don't think you could
right,
correlate that.
Well, I'm just wondering if unless there's an actual like they're relaunching all the X-Men. They've got a new Guardians of the Galaxy movie coming out. They're just not seeing enough bang for their buck to just relaunch like Uncanny Avengers with another number one. They know that that will go out and be a high seller or higher, but then by two or three, it's just right back down. I'm wondering if they're kind of moving away from it.
The biggest one was that U.S. Avengers fiasco, which was kind of like New Avengers. It was the same damn team. And they did the 55 or 56 covers because of the states and such. And it was number one on the charts. But now it's like below 30K. I mean, and then they dropped another one. So it's like already in ready to cancel. It's ridiculous.
And that's what I'm wondering. It's like they see that big, increase for a number one. But overall, do they see less people buying them?
I could see them doing like
what
the
was
then
previous.
Yeah, I could see them doing like the U.S. Avengers if they were the Avengers. This is like New Mutants plus a bunch of Z-listers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Cannonball and Sunspot and Red Hulk, but it's not even Thunderbolt Ross. I mean, it's freaking insane. And that feels like it never was a relaunch. That feels like it was just right out of New Avengers, like they could have kept the numbering.
Well, they did that a lot last year with All New Hawkeye. They did that with Spider-Woman, with Silk. Like, they just ended them after, six issues with Secret... What was it called? Was it Secret Wars?
Secret Wars, yeah.
Yeah, and then they started them again with the exact same creative team, with the exact same storyline that had been going on.
So Old Man Logan, Jeff Lemire is leaving, and somebody's coming aboard, and they're keeping the numbering?
Yep. Uncanny Avengers is another one.
Who's coming on board?
I don't remember. I'd have to go back and look at the things. I look at Newsarama every once in a while.
I think I could see Marvel scaling it back a little bit because they've gotten sort of overboard on it, and there's just a lot of there's definitely blowback online. Yeah, I mean, I could see
Doctor
still...
Strange is another one. What's his name? Jason Aaron's
Jason
leaving.
Jason Aaron's leaving.
Somebody else is coming on, but the numbering is just going to keep continuing. Because really, how much more of a gain are you going to get with relaunching a Doctor Strange number one? There's not even a movie. You know, at the time there was a movie out when they launched it. There's no movie out now. I can't imagine it's going to be worth their while to start with a new number one and risk, other people just taking
well,
it
the,
as a
the, da- the danger there is they relaunch it and they say, well, this isn't Jason Aaron because
right,
Jason
so
Aaron's like
it.
A known commodity, right?
Exactly.
So they're going to say, what the hell? I'm going to – and then your orders are left – minus the speculation variant rarity thing – that you're back to where you started, but worse because
yes.
Now you've lost all the Jason, the guys that are there just for Jason Aaron.
And then if you're somebody just still
Bacallo,
trying to
right?
get it
I mean, Bacallo has quite a big of a following.
Who's that?
Chris Bacallo or
whatever his
name is.
Mm-hmm.
Like
yep.
That guy's art. People will just flock to it for the art.
Yeah.
I mean, since he did Generation X, I mean, he's been kind of like he's had his own cult following.
Yeah. I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I think what it is you can if you have 20 new number ones, you can only spend so much promotion on every single one of them. You know, so it's like well, maybe it's not really worth relaunching and putting promotional attention on a new Doctor Strange number one right now. There's no new movie, etc. So why don't we put our attention on this team and relaunching this team and this number one so that, we can focus our attentions there.
Yeah.
So I can see Marvel pulling back from that a little bit. And as far as the, like, I think there is something of value in the music media comparison in the sense that, like, I don't think in the same way that you, like Mike said, you can still get CDs at Target. Like, Best Buy still has the CD section, but as opposed to not even that long ago, where it was one of the first things you encountered in the store and it took up like at least 25, 30% of the store, now it's always in the back of the store and it's like 10% of their space.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
Like, I
there's
think,
hardly anything there now.
yeah, and it's going to be focused on like the top higher level of the stuff that's going to sell. Same thing with Target. Like, if you want anything obscure, like a band that's not that well known, you got to go online. And you can still get physical CDs and vinyl and stuff like that from smaller bands, but you have to order it directly. Like, you're not even going to try to find it in a store or anything.
You can go to
So I
Amazon or
think,
something.
yeah.
Right, Amazon. Or if you're lucky enough to still have a local record store. I mean, Buffalo has a handful of them. I don't know if you just saw, Chris, that the University Plaza Record Theater is closing.
No.
So they'll still have one location wherever it is, like somewhere in actual, city of Buffalo. I don't know where it is, but.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, like, the music industry has been in that place for a while now, which is why, like, I remember, when, like, Home of the Hits and stuff like that closed, another independent record store in the area, like, that was more news to me than what you just said now, because I'm like, yeah, like, that's been happening for a long time now, But, so I think that with comic books, physical comic books that you can actually go to a retail place and buy, like, it's going to be just further degradation, till we
Because
get to a point.
where do you get comics from now? You get them from the direct market. Once those shops
Yeah.
close, I mean that's their bread and butter is comics.
Oh, yeah. So
I
you'll
mean,
have even more shops
some of
close.
them have like diversity, but you ask like what their main business is, and most of it is
Comic books.
comics. At least in our area, it could be different in your area.
Well, our main comic book store here only sells comic books.
And
Yeah, that's
they're
it.
like and they're an example of a store that's been around for a really long time, has like an established customer base, and like is like the premier, like, best known comic shop in the area. But they also used to, at like in the 80s and at the height of things, had more than one location. They don't have that anymore. And then, like, we have actually had new comic shops open up, but I think that those will end up closing again. And like most places will have eventually have even fewer, only the real big shops, the real strong shops, will stay open and will continue to diversify. I think a lot of the stores still do a lot of money in like Magic the Gathering and stuff. Magic the Gathering is still super hot, which I would have never predicted, but so just like you said, like, okay, vinyl's made a comeback, but
There'll be
it's not
retro
like
shops. I agree
it's
with you.
retro
They'll
stuff. Yeah, it is.
be shops that are gonna be have oh, these are back issues and collectibles, but it's not gonna
Yeah.
be it won't be like direct market stuff where the whole shop relies on the new books that are come. There won't be like a Wednesday Warrior. It'll be like a Wednesday Warrior digitally. Oh, you can download the books now. Let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got
And
you.
like you might have some smaller publishers rely primarily on digital sales, but then they might offer like for like a limited time type of thing for your paper version. Like, you see that in the like in the video game industry now. Like, there's tons of indie games because of digital distribution. Like, the reason that the indie games market like came about was because of digital distribution, because they couldn't afford to print. They couldn't afford the print, the making of the cartridges and stuff. But they also, even more so, couldn't really afford to get them into like Target and Best Buy and stuff like that. But they, if there's enough success around the game, once it comes out, people buy it digitally. there's companies that have arisen, and they'll do a limited print run for collectors. So that's something you could probably see down the road in comics too, where like just take someone randomly like Dynamite or something, like they can't really afford to like print all their books in paper anymore, but every once in a while, like, but maybe every time they release a new issue, like you have a limited window of time to order one of a limited amount of copies or something, you know?
I mean, the one thing they could do is like, if they had a digital presence, they could say print on demand. Like they could, people could like have things. I mean, if they develop a fast and way to do it, it could be print on demand. You could like read something and say, oh, I want that. Or when the collected edition, I'll print on demand. But who knows?
Yeah, there's
I just know we're heading towards a like streaming type philosophy, which means that DVDs and Blu-rays are going to fade out. Everybody's
it'll be more of a collector thing.
Internet. Yeah, it's more like it's more like a retro thing, like this podcast. There won't be any podcasts. We'll be broadcast into your brain.
Well, yeah, like you mentioned DVDs and Blu-rays. That's another example. Like, is like you have companies that have come up like Warner Classic Archives.
Yeah.
Which is print on demand, you know, like there's collectors out there. There's people that like physical copies of the stuff. It's not just like print. It's just not just comic fans with that like print, you know, like you have your video game collectors that like to have a physical copy. You have your movie fans that like to have a physical copy, and like, and companies have arisen to fulfill that need. They're not the big companies, but they might even be divisions of bigger companies. Like I said, like Warner Classic Archives, it's all print on demand. And so like you go on there, you order, cause you know, you happen to want like a copy on DVD of this obscure movie, that it's not worth it to them to, you know, print thousands of copies and ship them out to retail stores. But, it's there if you want it, you know?
Yeah. That's a good point.
So I think a lot of that stuff you'll see, you know, in the comic industry.
Yeah, I can see that. Good discussion.
Amen.
Doing the Lord's work.
Yes.
This is my Catholic upbringing coming in.
Put your hand out, so hit you with the ruler right now.
Mike, were you Catholic? Are you Catholic?
Yeah.
We're all Catholics, too.
I didn't go to Catholic school, though. I went to public school.
Oh, I didn't go to Catholic school. Yeah.
Well, I went to public school, too, but I had catechism and stuff like that, you know, through the church.
I had Sunday school, but it wasn't taught by nuns. It was, I don't know who they, I guess they were just, like, people that...
Volunteers?
Yeah, volunteers from the church, I guess.
Yeah. Same here.
Of the three of us, is anybody still practicing?
I am not, and I haven't been in a very, very, very long time.
No.
Yeah, me too.
I was going to say, I remember Sunday school, we had an assignment to, by the following Sunday, to look at the paper and find some news article that had some kind of... you know, like religious theme or significance or whatever. That's the best I can remember the assignment. But I remember the article that I found was, it was about, I can't remember in detail, and it sounds really strange, but I know it was, to some extent, it was about like demonic possession.
Yeah. You watched The Exorcist.
It was the complete opposite.
Well,
it does, because to show what Catholicism, at least when I'm older than you guys, but it did a lot of things through fear. Like if you don't do X, Y, and Z, you're burning in hell.
Right.
You know.
And
that's why, even though I'm not I don't believe in it, and you know, as we discussed before, but I think the new Pope is pretty cool.
I do like him. Yeah.
Seems like a good person.
By comparison, I would say like, by relative to prior popes.
But we're in a different time too, Rob. So like, philosophy and that the way people think has changed a lot. So the Pope has to adapt.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, you see that throughout history.
Yeah, you could see that throughout history, just in every different Pope.
Hey, if the Pope is against Donald Trump, he must be doing something right.
Who's not? I mean, he's a freaking embarrassing person. If you can't see that, I just don't. He just can't he can't even like be like an ambassador for us. It's just embarrassing.
Yeah.
It's like putting a reality TV show like from what was that MTV show that Daryl used to watch? God dang, where they had Snooki. You know, it's like putting Snooki as your representative.
What was it? Jersey Shore.
Yeah, it's like Jersey Shore. It's like putting Snooki in front of everybody and say, here's our representative for the United States.
Yeah. Not far off.
Well, hey, to finish my story.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chris. Go ahead.
Before we get even more off track, even though this story is not really on topic, but to finish my story, there was a thing in the article about the girl that was supposedly possessed, and one of the things that it said was a sign of it was that lights would flicker when she was underneath them. Mm-hmm. And I started to get nervous and scared that I was possessed by a demon because there was this light in our house. When I was under it, it would flicker around that time. And in hindsight, I realized that it was because the bulb was going. But I thought I was scared that I was possessed by a demon for a little while.
It was either that or the light was going.
Yeah. Why am I walking on the side of the wall? Well, now I'm crawling on the ceiling. My head just spins 360 degrees. I must be possessed. I actually believe in supernatural shit. I don't know. I just do. But that's me.
I would like to, but I haven't found anything convincing about that.
Yeah, I'm Dr. 13, pretty much.
I love that guy.
I don't believe in anything. Like, I'm a complete skeptic. But the flip side of it is I love creativity. Like, I love fantasy and science fiction. I love all the... I love to read about that stuff, but I just believe it all could be make-believe, you know? Whereas, like, I guess I see that as a contrast just because, like, my father is different. Like, he's also probably, like, fairly skeptic, but he tends to, like, he's never really had an interest in like, fantasy and that kind of stuff. Like, he's more of, like, into, like, historical fiction, like, detective stuff and like all like reality based stuff.
Well, I like that stuff too. I like reading like fiction like that's religious. I find it fascinating. Like Phantom Stranger, I absolutely loved. Like
I'm very interested in religion.
It blew my mind. Even in the Swamp Thing arc when they started to go down that ramp before Alan Moore left. So, I just dig that stuff. It's fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find it interesting, too. And religious history and stuff like that.
Because
mm-hmm. It's still very, very important and relevant to our society and to history and everything like that.
And for me, it's really fascinating because it's like, obviously... I'm not seeing the same thing that a large portion of people are seeing. And so I like to kind of learn about that stuff just to see, okay, where is their mind coming from and stuff like that? Like why are they seeing A and I see B? They're not the same. Do you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like they, you know, I mean, my parents are very religious. My dad particularly has been a Catholic forever.
So are my parents. Well, my mom is.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're not the...
She'll be, like, she'll say her prayers every morning.
Yeah, they're not the type that
have faith.
That would are going to go out and, like, you would necessarily need to know that they are. Because they don't push, you know, and somebody else. But they are very much so. And so it's just, you know, I mean, it's like they're obviously seeing connections in the world that I don't see. I don't think that what they're seeing is legitimate, but they do. You know what I mean? And it's like,
I think what my mom sees is legitimate. It's just not how I think. So
yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
This has been a good religious segment of retro.
Yeah. Well, it's retro in the fact that we all grew up with it.
Exactly.
Yeah. We're all in similar spots though in mm-hmm. the way we think now. And I don't know why that is, but
yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
For me it was the church scared me. It wasn't embracing at all. It was a dark place. The confessionals, I felt I had to lie about.
I had to make up sins
because yep. Where am I going to say I've done nothing wrong?
And yeah, because you're 12.
Yeah. You're like, what have I done? Oh, I have to make up. Oh, I lied to my parents. No, I didn't, but I did.
Yeah.
I had to make shit up just so I seemed like a
Because you were
a
smart enough
sinner.
To know that you couldn't just go in there and say I didn't do anything wrong. And yeah. Because you knew that they would say, oh, yes, you have.
Yeah.
So now tell me the truth. Right?
Yeah.
Funny.
Scary shit.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk some comics in the retro.
Sounds good to me.
What a novel idea.
Or TV. You could talk anything. I almost did TV this week, but I just didn't have time.
Retro entertainment.
Retro entertainment.
I've decided to make my choice an album. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just covering.
God,
I'm
going to
play
so
every track for you.
That's how we'll discuss. Michael Jackson.
Before we start, why don't we go back to the question that we had from last week?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea. From
and
Mr.
we'll tackle
Beats.
That just to get us into the mode.
Sure.
So Jim Beats said,
a la mode.
You know, back in the day, they had crossovers between the big two. And he's like, well, which ones would you like if you could have it that way? You know, like what teams would you like to have? Like they had Amazing Spider-Man, Superman. That was, I think, the first one out the gate. We had New Teen Titans, X-Men, which is probably the best one. I mean, the best well-written and drawn one.
Mm-hmm.
I think it stands up today. We've had several others. I mean, even in the 90s, we had, you know, Batman, Punisher, Batman. That's when they would do different swaps. Now it's even a big deal. Now we got Dynamite DC with Shadow Batman and Wonder Woman 77 and Bionic Woman. And we have Boom Studios with Lumberjanes and Gotham Academy and Power Rangers and Justice League and a lot of different crossovers.
Yeah,
so he's saying if you could have your retro team working on a cross company, what would it be?
And what was the examples he gave again? Those are pretty good ones. Do you
he
have
said,
them, or I can look
Warlock
them up?
Warlock and Green Lantern by Jim Starlin, Conan and Korak by Joe Kubert, FF and the Doom Patrol by Stan and Jack.
Yeah, those are good ones.
I wouldn't mind. Oh, go ahead, Chris. Go.
I was going to say that I came up with two. I have two that I came up with that. And I stopped there, but I think I came up with two pretty good ones.
I bet you're going to get one very similar to mine.
Hmm. So you have one, Mike?
I have two, but I think one of them is going to be very similar to mine.
I'm just saying we could go around, do one at a time each
or
something.
Yeah, well, go ahead and go first. Start it off.
All right, I'll start off with which one should I do first? I'll do the Legion of Superheroes and meet the original Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm.
Oh, that was good. I didn't expect that.
That was very good.
You threw me for there. I didn't think you were going to say that.
And because usually the way they did it would have one of the company's teams do it. So we'll have that by Paul Levitz and Keith Giffen.
Very interesting.
So that's my first one.
I like that.
I love new Giffen art. His new Giffen art is just like Herbie to me, so.
Yeah, he can do that style pretty well.
Well, mine is, I would like to see Jack Kirby, because that's my guy, doing a New Gods and Humans crossover. Writing and drawing it.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think I was focusing more on the villain side, but then
That'd be good.
Yeah.
See, I didn't go there.
That's what I'm going to do. But then along with that would come the heroes. So I would like to see the Joker and the Green Goblin get together because they're both totally insane. And then, of course, you could then have the team up being Batman and Spider-Man. In terms of who the creative team would be, I haven't really given that as much thought. So I'd love to see. I don't know. I'm leaning probably more towards Batman creators. I've Jim Aparo. I'd like to see him do the art, but I'm not sure about the writer.
Nice.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, the approach Aparo. I took was I just kind of looked at the time period that the original ones happened and like what other books were coming out at the time. There wasn't a Guardians book.
Harley Quinn! What are you doing?
Whoa. Shh.
Harley, you be good.
Oh my gosh.
We're podcasting. We can't play right now. She got a burst of energy.
Yes. Whoa.
I don't know if you heard before, but the tags were going back and forth. She was running across the room like a
no, I didn't hear that. Hell.
I want to give some input. So yeah, so I just kind of looked at that time period that they were happening at and what was going on. So the other one I came up with is, let's see here, Jonah Hex and Ghost Rider.
God,
by
that would be interesting.
Ghost Rider?
The first Ghost Rider
on the horse.
Yeah, around that. Well, the
he's talking about Johnny Blaze, right?
Johnny Blaze, yeah.
Oh, okay.
He's not talking about the Ghost Rider before with the white costume and the hat.
Well, I was wondering because they both, both in the Westerns.
So. No, that's a valid question.
Oh, you're onto something there.
Yeah, that's a valid question, but I was thinking just, the Ghost Rider, Johnny Blaze, 70s, time period. And Michael Fleischer did both characters. And then you have Tony DeZuniga on, DeZuniga, or however you say that, on art.
He is a big Jonah Hex guy. He'd draw a lot of Westerns in general.
Yeah.
He's good.
So I think those would be that'd be a cool crossover.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's my other one.
I would do a Doom Patrol X-Men, except I would reverse it. I would put Arnold Drake and Bruno I can't pronounce his name. Primanini, who is the Doom Patrol team. Doing the crossover instead of Stan and Jack.
Well, I don't really have another one.
Permieri, maybe, or something?
Yeah, Permieri. No, there's no an R. Premiani.
Good. Premiani, yeah. It's got Premiani. Bruno Premiani. That sounds correct. That sounds Italian.
Premiani!
Giordano was his first name.
I didn't even Giordano think about going with the villains. I like that. I would love to see like a Kingpin Lex Luthor thing.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Versus the Hair Club for Men.
Yes.
It would have been called Baldies. they're really powerful villains, very similar styles, except you don't usually see Kingpin in a suit of armor.
No.
But their philosophy.
But that could be one of the features of the crossover is that like Kingpin has to borrow Lex's power suit.
Yeah. Kingpin rather fight himself like with his brute strength than have some artificial strength.
Right. Yeah, he's got more imposing physical
But
stature.
it could be interesting though, like if you did those two characters and then had opposing heroes of Superman and Daredevil, because the scale is just off the charts. Like
Yeah.
Lex Luthor and Superman are way more in a different league than Kingpin and Daredevil, but there's a lot of similarities if you don't include power sets. I liked what they
Yeah,
did
very
with
cool.
Punisher Batman with, Jigsaw and what was the villain? Two-Face. 'Cause look at those villains, they're very similar.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
You could have Clark Kent reporting for the Daily News on a trial that Matt Murdock is
I
the
like
lawyer
it. Sal
for. That's cool.
Buscema would be the artist, and I don't know who would write it. I'd have to think about it.
Yeah. Nice. I think, did you want to, do we have any other questions, like new ones?
We have one, but we could do that maybe as a break between the our books.
Sure.
Sure.
So, who wants to go first?
I can.
Yeah, why don't you, Rob, kick us off since you've been off gallivanting.
Exactly. Mike, I know you've talked about issue one of this and your Valiant Verses and maybe even your weekly reads or whatever, but I wanted to just discuss Shadow Man Volume 2, number 1 through 4,
Nice.
because I bought the paper, the trade that came out, I don't know, sometime last year,
Yeah.
and I just
It's like
read it, and
Garth Ennis, right?
Garth Ennis, yeah, exactly. So the actual trade has issues 1 through 4, and then it has the Dead Side 1 through 3. Was supposed to be a 4-issue series, only went 3, but then it has all of like the script from number 4 as well, so you can read what was supposed to happen. Although they're all single stories for the Dead Side ones,
A
but
hell
that's
of a
not what I'm going to
first
cover.
issue, isn't it?
Well, you know what? I'm reminded a lot about what you said on in the Valiant Versus episode, and it is. It's like, and it's funny because I didn't appreciate it at the time that I read it, because I don't think I read any other, like Volume 2, like when Acclaim relaunched. I don't think I read anything else at the time except for Shadow Man.
Yeah.
I certainly didn't read XO or Ninjak or what else was there? Magnus. I didn't read. I don't even remember seeing them at the store, but I did see Shadow Man, and I bought the first few issues, and I'm not sure if I just stopped getting it or if he stopped carrying them. But either way, yeah, I mean it's really a great first issue, in that.
You know what's odd though is like I'm totally in the minority, I believe here, but I've always found Zero is a more interesting Shadow Man than Jack.
Well,
And
I'm going to tell
I do
you.
love Jack, but the way they evolve Zero from Volume 2 to Volume 3, oh my God, it's incredible.
And that's what I was just going to say, is I don't know that I've read enough yet of Zero to make a decision, but these first 4 issues were great, and I'm going to have to find the rest of this run, because I don't have. I think I have 1 through 3 as floppies, and then now I have this trade that's 1 through 4. So I don't think I've read anything
Good
past
luck.
four.
That
Yeah, I
issue
know.
6 in that volume is like $200
Is it
now. I mean,
really?
yeah, it's
Oh, come
expensive.
on.
It's
And you know, I mean, are
well,
they? I don't think they're ever going to
there's
make.
a couple of issues that are incredibly high because the print run is so
Yeah.
low, and it's Armorines number 3, Shadow
Right.
Man number 6 for that last volume. The Dead Side, like you said, that last one never came out. And
Nope.
Unity 2000 number 3. They're just low print run because the carpet was pulled from underneath them. They couldn't finish.
Right. No. Yeah. I mean, I understand. It's, but The sad thing is I don't know that they're ever going to keep coming out with trades for more of this. I was surprised that they released this at all. This isn't really what Valiant is currently releasing. So it's kind of strange to even see.
But when Zero becomes a radio talk show host, it is just off the charts awesome. Because he is like the guy you call at midnight. And you say, well, I got a problem. I can't fix my sink. And he has an answer for everything. It's awesome. It's such an awesome idea.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, this was, I mean, you know, as you know, Mike, and I don't know if you've ever, have you ever read any of this, Chris?
No, I don't know any of the like Acclaim stuff. I just
have you,
know,
have
like,
you played the video game? Shadow Man was Zero in the Acclaim.
Yeah, he was. I had the video game.
Yeah.
Nice.
But this particular series starts right away showing the dead body of the Valiant era Shadow Man, Jack Boniface. And, you know, they're just totally, like, destroyed. And basically what the plot of these first four issues are there's this hitman named Zero who nobody really knows anything about him. He's extremely effective at his job, and then when he's done, he just like goes to a bar, and the bartender's like his only friend, and he's got this stuffed bear that he just holds on to the entire time while he's just at the bar drinking.
That's so awesome! I love this.
And you know, then as the issues progress, of course, there's these three or four bad guys from the dead side. Tommy Lee Bones is the main one, and he's got like two or three followers, and they're just like killing people left and right and stuff. And Nettie comes back from the first series as well, and wants
Nettie
to make
Nettie was the spider alien in the first volume.
I forgot that.
Yeah, she's well, isn't she the one that bit him? Or no. She's the one that would work with him.
Yeah, she would work with him. She was like the old voodoo person.
Yeah, the old woman, yeah.
Yeah. So she's back in here, and she wants to make Zero a Shadow Man, saying that he's going to be the perfect one because he doesn't have a conscience. He doesn't even remember like anything before what he's been doing. Turns out he starts getting his memories back. Oh, Jaunty's in this too, but he is definitely not a monkey.
Yeah.
Like some sort of weird snake creature with a skull for a head. Mm-hmm. The only thing that's in common with the current Jaunty and this one is they both wear a top hat.
Yeah.
I
kind of like the skull better, the skull and
it was,
snake. Because
it was quite a change like to wrap my mind around it when they were calling him Jaunty.
The thing that I don't like about current Valiant in the dead side is it's too much... It's too light. Like, it's very hot Harry Potter-ish to me. At least the way they've brought it back the second time with Matt Kent. And the way the dead side is always in my mind is it's this creepy-ass hell place to be.
Yeah, I can totally agree with you there.
And to me, having him as a snake with a skull head is more terrifying than having a monkey with a top hat.
Well, the idea of the dead side in this universe is way more disturbing than even, you know, than the current Valiant. I mean, basically, when you die, you're just in this dead side. And
yeah.
Like there's the one part of the dead side where I can't remember exactly what it's called, the hollowing or the howling or something. And people just stand around, like, moaning and screaming.
Well,
they basically go insane.
We're horror fans. And they do a good job of being scary, like making the dead side terrifying.
Very much so.
Yeah. I mean, it's
something
that would
really
be played
upon
scary.
It. Yeah.
Side.
Yeah. It really, really just creepy, disturbing, really well done. And I like how they, Nettie, basically, instead of him wearing a mask, they just implant the mask directly onto his chest. And, he remembers his own backstory, and he was a college student, and he was in a car with his parents and his little brother, I believe, and they get in a wreck where his three family members die, and it was his little brother's teddy bear. He went into a coma, and basically Nettie came to him while he was in a coma and implanted like all of these skills into him. So when she needed him as a shadow man, he would know how to kill. And by the end of the four issues, he basically renounces. He takes care of Tommy Lee Bones and the crew, but he also renounces Nettie and saying, basically, you know, I'm not going to be your shadow man. And then at the very end, she goes to the graveyard, works some voodoo, and brings Jack back to life. Said it's not going to last. He's basically going to start falling apart, but brings Jack back to life to face off against Zero. But now I have no idea what happens after this, because I don't own any issues, and I really would love to read the rest.
I think you could find like most of it. It's just the
conclusion. Volume two is not. I was just looking on Atomic Avenue, and volume two is like, I mean, they got copies 96 cents each.
Yeah, you're fine. It's the next one.
Yeah, the next one I'm looking at, I mean, the lowest one, just for the price range, is like $14 for like number one, and then keeps going up higher and higher until, like you said, number two. But they're listing it at 120, but there's no copies available.
It's so classic, like Garth describing, like he's on the mortician, you know, Jack Boniface, and they're like they're showing all the damage to Jack, right?
Yeah,
he's on the mortician. They busted him up so bad, and they're just like recording what's wrong with his body, and he's just so jacked up.
Huh?
They broke almost everything in his body.
Yes. Yeah. It was. I mean, and that's right away from page one, right?
Uh-huh, right off the bat.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's like. Here. I'll just read a couple. It says the color of eye is blue, so presumably the other one was too. Color of hair brown if you shampoo the brains out of it.
Yeah.
Height 5'8", weight 170. But those would go up a little if he still had his feet.
Yeah. It's incredible. This book is so, in my opinion, is so underrated because it has this connotation like with Acclaim took over and we just hate it.
Yep.
But Acclaim didn't do everything bad. You know what I mean?
Right.
Shadow Man, they you could argue either way, but I think they made it better. They made it more voodoo-centric, which to me is the scary part of Shadow
totally
Man.
Agree.
Because like if you see like movies like Serpent in the Rainbow and voodoo, like voodoo movies with like true zombies and voodoo dolls and stuff, all that stuff is terrifying. And even the speak that they have when they're around the fires and stuff like that, possessing people, it's terrifying. And this book captures some of that. Like the next volume, even he's a radio show and this woman says, I need your help, blah, 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 come to this. He goes to this house and finds out it was one of them owned by like a voodoo priest. And he's like, I'm done. I got to get the hell out of here. And this is Shadow Man saying that. Like, I don't even want to be involved at this point. He says, why did you open those jars? Those jars were kept for a reason, you know? It's like you released the spirit.
I totally 100% agree with you. You know, there was plenty that maybe wasn't quite as, especially if you're comparing it to early original Valiant, that wasn't quite as good. But this was, I mean, well, Garth Ennis, it was, you know, a real good writer. And, you know, he's good at portraying these creepy, disturbing horror type elements, and it definitely paid off. This was a great first four issues. The Dead Side was not even written by him, but those were super creepy as well. And like I said, I'd love to read the rest of this run. So that you're right. I'm looking at volume two, and that shouldn't be hard or expensive to pick up. So at least could finish that off.
Yeah, Paul Jenkins did the Dead Side. So
yeah. Yeah, that was
very that's kind of why I liked like him coming back and doing Shadow Man. Do you know what I mean? Even if it was three issues, he did what he could in three issues.
Yeah.
And I think he did it well. Like that little three-issue arc to me was better than people give it. I understand that he took a lot of liberties in changing the relationship and such, mm-hmm. That they hadn't built upon. But he had three issues, and Valiant's in such a weird state right now. They recycle fast.
They really are.
And I made a theory is, I think if this XO number one doesn't go through, because I heard from Martin, and I don't know how true this is, they put six figures into marketing XO.
Oh-hoo.
But if you look at their sales numbers for XO before, it was, you know, 5,000s. They're not a lot of demand.
No, they have not been doing
six
well.
Figures. Yeah. I'm like, holy crap. Yeah, you know they're going to sell a boatload because there's Valiant fans, and you can listen to Collecting Valiant that are after those. They're hardcore collectors. That's mm-hmm. not me, but there's people out there that will get a 1 in 500. But it falsifies the numbers. I mean, give me a break, you know?
Right. Yeah, let's see how number four does.
Yeah, tell me how number four does after these shenanigans are done.
Yeah. And I wish them the best. I mean, obviously, I want them.
Oh, I always wish them the best. They've only done, like, I don't mind that they do the 1 in 500s. I just don't like the ripple effect because mm-hmm. people see that as a, oh, yeah, collectible. That, I mean, that's great from a collector's perspective. But what they don't understand is the boatload of books that are just stacked, doing nothing, you know?
yeah.
Those aren't actual sales until later, like you said, issue four. That's when you really understand where it's selling.
Well, we saw that with Book of Death.
I'm glad you read this because, man, I tell people about this Zero character and how good he is, and nobody ever says anything. So I'm so glad you got it because you at least – I know you come from the background of the horror genre too, and you mm-hmm. see it. It's more terrifying than what was there before. Yeah.
It was just so well done and so interesting. I really can't wait to read some more. But, I mean, he did a great job at setting up this character as being this, you know, kind of like a badass blank slate, but only – so far as like a couple issues, and then you get this really tragic, heartbreaking backstory that just makes him so much more interesting. Even so, it's just a great character.
Hey, if you want to do a quick Valiant podcast about this Zero Shadow Man, once you get your books on the next volume, I'd love to do it with you.
Sure, that sounds good.
I'd love to do that because I am so into Zero. I am just.
Yeah, well, this was good. This was really good. I knew that you would appreciate it just from your comments, just with reviewing number one. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, when I read this, I'm like, oh, I'm going to, I gotta talk about this one because all four issues were just incredible.
Well, I had big plans for that, but it just never, time never.
Oh, I know. I mean,
but I
only have so much time to do so.
I couldn't put the book down when I got into it. Do you know what I mean? Like, of all the – when I was doing Valiant Verses, I had to read the whole damn thing. I had to read all of Shadow Man because I got so involved.
Mm-hmm.
I got so engrossed with the character. And towards the end of that first volume, there's some that are not that great.
Yeah.
You do have some interesting things. Like, you have a – that Rye artist, what's his name? The guy who does Rye?
Clayton Crane, oh yeah.
You have Clayton Crane doing an image style art.
Yes.
And it's really fascinating to see because Clayton Crane's style is totally different. Like it's like
totally different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's when Clayton Crane was spelled with K's instead of C's.
Yes, Clayton Crane was with K's and he drew a very like Spawn type Shadow Man.
Yeah.
So and he had him fighting the like a KKK type thing, which was interesting in itself because of, you know, who Zero is.
Sure.
But man, there's so much gold there that I think if Valiant wants to try to get, I don't know how they can get out of this Harry Potter dead side though. they've already opened that up, but
Well, you know what they need to do, and I don't know, you know, I don't know exactly how to do it, but there were some creepy aspects to it in Dr. Mirage.
Yes.
In the new Dr. Mirage. So there's creepy areas that they could kind of, I don't know. I think that they could work something out if they really wanted
to. Actually,
I just don't
know. They actually made Master Dark scary back then.
Yeah, he's not scary right now.
And he's not, he's a tree. I mean, yeah. they've really destroyed Master Dark, I think.
Yeah.
Justin Jordan got it early on, but they never did anything with it. Do you know when he had the brother-sister relationship? It was really dark. And it had potential, but they didn't take it off. They didn't, like, I really wish they would have did a follow-up in that tone, because they had it right. Like, Justin Jordan had it right early on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. It's like you said, it's tough nowadays. I mean, that thing, what did it last? 16 issues. It's like, I think if that exact comic came out just as it did even just a few years ago, I don't think it would have lasted 16 issues.
Yeah, and it all depends to our likings. Like, some people might like that they've lightened up the dead side. You know what I mean? It's just that we come from we like the horror genre, so when you have the voodoo and the stuff being more terrifying, I think it, like, relates to us. You know, like, this is Shadow Man. Shadow Man was meant to be dark.
That's, I mean, that's
dark
my
and supernatural. That, you know, there's no light side. There's
no, there shouldn't.
Dead
side shouldn't be light. That's the nature of the of what it is.
There shouldn't,
you know,
be
what I
these
mean?
Floating it, land masses and look like Cloud City, and I don't know. It's not right.
Yeah. But yeah, it was very good. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to my best shot probably is going on eBay and see if I can see anyone that has, like, a full run or something.
Well,
like
I want to know, did you read this in the dark at work in the closet with the blanket over you?
I, as a matter of fact, I did during lunchtime. Yeah. Yeah, I sat down. I'm like, well, let me read these four issues. So I read them back to back just at lunch in the little closet next door.
I made it more. Made it scarier. It's like sex in public. Part of it's the risk.
Yeah.
That's right. That was good.
Cool. Well, you want me to go next, Mike?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. I read Alf, number 5.
Nice.
Very similar in tone to Shadow.
Yeah, pretty much. I figured I'd just carry it on. You know, it was interesting, Mike, last time we were talking about Star Comics and how Elf doesn't have Star on the front.
Yeah.
It's interesting because on the inside it says a Star Comics presentation.
That is interesting because it never had the – they didn't even market it as such.
No.
But I bet you it has Star Comics ads in there.
Yep, it does. Yeah, and it has like the Star Signals. There's a little thing about Ernie Colon.
Yeah.
The checklist has got other Star Comics on it. Muppet Babies number 20, Carrick Bears number 17. And on the back cover, I totally forgot that I did this when I was a kid, but it has a Be a G.I. Joe, where you can fill out this form.
Oh yeah.
And send in $7.50 plus $1.50 shipping and handling. Ohio residents, please add applicable sales tax to Hasbro, and you get your own G.I. Joe figure. And, you know, it has the helmet on, so obviously it's your face underneath the helmet. But yeah, you like select out, like, it's multiple choice. So, you know, like, what's your primary military specialty? Is it jungle warfare, artillery, or whatever? So yeah, I totally forgot I did that, and I had one of those.
Did you have a name?
I wish I could see now, because you do make up your own code name, but I have no idea what mine was. I don't remember. That would be awesome to be able to see that now. But
what issue number was it?
Number 5.
Oh, number 5, that's what I thought you said.
It has in the tradition of great comic books, it has a cover that does not happen in the issue, where Elf has an elephant sitting with him on the couch. No problem, Harry's house broken. It doesn't actually happen in the issue, so it's
I'm surprised you read this, because you have cats and he eats cats.
I know, that comes up. he's not allowed to eat their cat.
The Lucky,
even
right?
Though he tries to, yeah.
His name was Lucky.
What about Lucky?
That was the cat's name, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I think so. Yeah. So this was by Michael Gallagher. Was the writer? I looked him up, and he's done a lot of this kind of stuff, like and also wrote for Mad Magazine, so like gag comics and stuff.
I thought he was the guy that smashed watermelons.
That's Gallagher, but I don't know if it's Michael Gallagher. He's just Gallagher, like Madonna. Dave Manick is the penciler. The only name I really recognize besides the editor-in-chief, of course, which is Tom DeFalco, is Marie Severin was the inker and colorist. But anyway, there's multiple stories in here. Stand In by Your Man is about Brian, the son in the family. He is going to be in a talent show, and he's going to do a ventriloquist act. And it's kind of funny at the beginning because Al's confused. He thinks that the ventriloquist dummy is real. So Brian makes the ventriloquist say, "We'll understand you better if you take that cucumber off your nose." "Oh, that is your nose." And Alf says, "Okay, put him up." He's ready to fight. But once he figures it out, he's all about it, and he wants to, you know, help Brian get ready. You know, wants to be his talent manager and all of that stuff. Just like his uncle on Melmac, who worked with Melmac Torme.
Melmac Torme, that's good. Torme.
But anyways, unfortunately, it is Lucky. Lucky, she shreds the ventriloquist dummy. It's made out of wood, and right before the act. So without the parents knowing, Brian takes Elf to the talent show instead, as his ventriloquist dummy, and Elf tends to be a dummy, and it goes really well. The dad, he's like super duper nervous in the first place about Willie. Is the dad's name? He's super nervous about Brian being in the talent show in the first place. And then when he sees Elf is on stage with Brian, he passes out. It's pretty good. Elf is pretty well behaved, except for at the end, he tries to tell this dirty joke that they set up earlier. Willie mentions it earlier. It starts, it's the one about the traveling satellite salesman. So Brian stops him from saying it. But it's kind of pays off at the end when they all get back home and they're like, Brian's got first place because, you know, they thought the Elf was a ventriloquist dummy. So they're like, he's not even moving his mouth, you know. But the mom in the family, she's when they're coming into the house, she says, "You boys have piqued my curiosity. I want to hear the traveling satellite salesman joke." And Willie says, "Believe me, honey, you really don't." She says, "Come on, I'm a big girl. Just whisper it to me." And he's like, "All right, well, if you insist." And he whispers it in her ear, and her face turns bright red. "William Tanner, how dare you? You and your alien joke writer can share the couch tonight."
Must be pretty bad. Kate,
yeah, so it was a pretty nasty joke, I guess. But at the end, Elf says, "It must have been your delivery, Willie. Let me hear you tell it." But so it's corny stuff.
Do you read this out loud, and try to do Elf's voice?
he reads it to Carol.
Yeah, it's their bedtime story.
Right. I have somewhere in the basement. I don't know exactly where it is, but I have. I can't remember if Barb bought me this. I think she might have bought me this. I have an Alf doll that if you push its back, it says like a bunch of Alf sayings. I'll have to go find it.
Nice.
But,
Yeah, I remember that because a friend of our family, like they had it. We didn't have one, but they did. So I remember
it's in my
but
the white spots of my brain, but I am pretty sure Barb got me that. Like I'm almost confident that she did.
so yeah, so that story like kind of could have been on the TV show. There's a two page in the middle called Mind Your Manners, which is basically like Kate, the mom, she gives Alf a book of etiquette to look at. So then he goes out to his spaceship and gets Melmacian Manners by Anarchy, a classic. Read Willy a few chapters, Kate. I don't know. I don't remember what he talks like. But I like the name Ann, middle initial R, last name Key, Anarchy. But yeah, it's a pretty funny like little thing just about manners on Melmac. Like you have to belch at mealtime, but it's rude if your belch makes their flowers wilt, and don't. Or it's considered polite to bring a magnet to dinner so that you don't swallow the silverware during your feeding frenzy. Silly things like that. And then the second half of the book is the other story in it. It's called Mythed Again. And this is more like something that they could only do in the comic book, which is Brian has to do a study on ancient Greece. He says, "Say, Mom, what do you know about ancient Greece?" And Elf says, "Plenty, judging by last night's fried chicken." There's a lot of corny jokes like that, but so basically what it turns into is Alf tells them a story about Melmac and like its equivalent of ancient Greece, and it's a takeoff on like on ancient Greece, like the myths and stuff like that. It's about Gordo of Shumwavia. So there's lots of jokes on like ancient Greece, and like he's attacked by instead of Medusa, it's Meduzzi, and she's got an arcane asparagus hairdo that turns men into vegetables. But Alf, I mean, excuse me, Gordo comes out from underneath of his ship, and he's already got sunglasses on, so. It like immediately kills her, and he's like, "Who left this nasty asparagus on the deck?" But he goes after a golden fleas. There's like a instead of a minotaur, there's a Minotaurus, half bull, half mid-sized economy car. Super still, super dumb, but yeah. So he gets these like golden fleas and brings them back and stuff like that. Anyway. I grabbed this issue out of 50-cent bin because I actually had this issue when I was a kid. This issue of Elf, I remember the cover, but I don't really remember the interiors. Whereas some of the comics I had, like the superhero comics, a lot of times when I open them up and read them, I'm like, "Oh yeah, I remember looking at this page and this page." But I think a lot of these Star comics and stuff like that I had, like I read them a couple times, but I quickly got more intrigued by the superhero stuff and pretty focused on that. It's like, "Oh, those Star comics are for babies, But
That's kind of how I felt, but I did get
yeah.
Alf. Matter of fact, I bought this one at the comic shop.
Nice.
I
It was
liked
only a
him.
reason.
I liked the first season. I think I watched the second season. He was a pop culture phenomenon at the time
Oh yeah.
because
Oh yeah. Yep.
he even appeared like in Hollywood Squares. I remember watching Hollywood Squares, the game show, and he was in one of the boxes like almost every week.
I looked up the show after reading this, and I found out that it was a pretty miserable set. Like a lot of the actors on the show, especially the guy that played the dad, Willie, like absolutely hated working on the show. And because of the conditions, like the way that they operated Elf was as a puppet, but you know, you'd see like him on all fours and or you know walking around on his legs. I mean, it's because they used a raised platform, so the puppeteer was underneath the platform, and the actors were on top of the platform. But it was like it would take so long. It would take him like 2 days to get like part of an episode. It was like really excruciating, and like everyone was miserable and hated it. Like on the last day of shooting of like the fourth and last season, the guy that played Willie, he just like
Thank
as soon
God.
As they said cut, he as soon as they said cut, he just like walked out and didn't say goodbye to anybody.
Wow.
And later he had
enough.
Yeah, I mean,
and
later
he was like such a like. Lighthearted dad in the show, if I remember. He wasn't like a dark dad, you know what I mean?
No, and they said like one of the things that they, you know, like it was quite an accomplishment that you couldn't tell from watching the show how miserable everybody was. And he said afterwards that as miserable as he was, like he knows that it made a lot of people happy, and he's proud of that. But it's kind of weird. Like I think part of it is like the creator, the guy that was the puppeteer for Elf and that created Elf. Like, another thing I read was that when, like, NBC did a 75th anniversary special, Tina Fey was, like, in charge of, I don't know if she hosted or if she was, like, the producer or whatever, but when she was on a talk show talking about it, she said one of the most difficult parts of doing the special was dealing with Elf's people.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. So I think there's something weird going on, but...
Apparently so.
Anyway, yeah, I remember it fondly, though.
Well, his wit would probably mean like it got some of the creators their team's personality in it.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know.
I remember for Star Comics, for some reason I have a full run of Wally the Wizard. I don't know why I enjoyed that.
Nice.
But other than that, just Peter Porker was the only other one that I got at the time.
Yeah.
Although I do have the first few Thundercats, but I wasn't a Thundercats fan, so I stopped buying it.
Well, we've seen, what is his name, Planet Terry, or Terry, what was that guy's
Planet
name?
Planet Terry, yeah, Planet yeah, Terry.
He showed up in Marvel Comics recently.
Did he?
Yeah.
Because I do have the first, like, two issues of
I can't
that.
Remember if it was Captain Marvel or one of those books. He was actually in it. Of course, he wasn't, like, cartoony. He was...
No, he was just a regular person.
Regular person, yeah.
Interesting.
Fun facts.
Yeah.
Okay, so my choice is, okay, I went down a rabbit hole. Okay, I started watching the Image Revolution, and I was like, God, man, I need all these Founding Fathers books. I need every single one of them. So I went on the Youngblood tirade, which isn't a lot to get because he doesn't do much. And the one thing that you'll find out about Youngblood is most of the work is not Rob Liefeld. He'll do the plot, but it's mostly his team from Extreme Studios that is putting the work together. I looked in my database and I said, wow, I'm missing issue 5 of volume 1. Why the hell is that? So I ordered it. I went to mycomicshop.com, ordered Youngblood, and I read it. And I was like... Oh shit, this is a flip book. So back in the 90s they did these flip books, and I know that that the Ultraverse did it too, because I thought I was missing books and I wasn't missing them. And the thing that makes a collector frustrated is you're going through your collection and you're going 1, 2, 3, ooh, 5, it's not there. Mm-hmm. Where is it? Well, I filed 5 underneath brigade number 4. So Brigade number 4 is the flip book. So I have 2 of these books, which makes sense because now I have a complete run, even though I had it twice. It's
Mike,
it's filed
that
under the right.
That would bother me so much that I would buy 2 of them specifically.
And that's exactly why they want you to do. we fell right into their trap. I mean, because I think I own 2 of the... Back in the day, I was like, I'm not falling for this. I know it's a flip book. But then in the database, I was missing stuff. And years later, when I said, I need to complete these runs, I go back and order it. And I'm like, crap, this firearm was a flip book. I had the other book. It was filed under whatever.
It took them 30 years, but they finally got you.
Yep.
Yeah, they finally got me. But so that's why I was missing Youngblood number 5. But it has Bad Rock on the cover, and he's saying "Let's rock." It's a Liefeld cover. Liefeld, Chap Yap on pencils, and Eric Stevenson, who's like one of the big Image guys that runs the show, was the script and editor. And if you watch Image Revolution, he's very young at the time. Like, they have old footage of Eric Stevenson, and he's really young. It almost is like if you watch the Atari documentary and you watch this one, it's very similar because it shows Extreme Studios, how they were like, they had so much work and so much money coming in, they didn't know what to do with, and it led to their downfall.
Mike, I got to tell you, thanks to listening to you on Geek Brunch. I'm 3/4 of the way through that documentary.
Yeah, it's great.
It's really good. Yeah. I heard Nick and Mark talk
about
it a while.
Yeah, it actually pumps you up, man. It's like, I want to get this. Matter of fact, I have everything Eric Larson's done. You know, a Savage Dragon, Sheet Dragon, Freak Force, a couple of the other ones, Patriot. But I am missing a lot of Spawn. So that's going to be the hard one to fill for me. But I have, I think now I have all of the Youngblood. I have all of the New Men, you know, all those obscure stuff. And I will have at some point, I have all the Stormwatch now. So Stormwatch is complete. Cyberforce is complete. Shadowhawk may be complete. So I got to still work on Shadowhawk maybe, but I have a closet full of comics I haven't inventoried yet, and I think those Shadowhawks are in there. So I
still... A closet full of comics.
Yeah. There's at least...
So a lot of people just own in general. It's just one closet.
Just a closet.
I need to inventory those, especially.
For the Spawn, just after you're finished dining on Bill, just take his Spawn collection.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I'm sure he stopped, though. Like,
did he?
I don't know how he could stop. That guy's crazy. His whole philosophy is strange because he gets all these number ones and he could sell them because they lead to what he wants to get, which is the whole story in a trade.
Yeah, that's
And he could sell like his, some of the books that he has are low print runs and he could make, you know, double or more off of sometimes a lot, like in the terms of Saga number one and stuff like that, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
But, yeah,
I wasn't a big. I didn't buy a lot of early. Like, I bought all the first arcs of Image, like when it first launched. But then after that, I collected just intermittently. Like, Spawn was the one I kept buying until like issue 53, and then I stopped.
For me, that was Savage Dragon.
I only bought like 7 issues or something. That was.
I like kept with that, and then everything else I dropped.
Everything else, like, ended
because there was, I was in college at the time that this happened, and comics were big. I mean, there were lines at the comic store. It was really interesting time because you had like the death of Superman, you had Batman breaking his back, you had Image, you had Valiant. I mean, everything was like weird, and for me, it was the Valiant that I kind of, I went and I said, man, they're putting more into the stories than the art. And versus that Image where they were putting more into the art and the dynamic of the art than the stories. But they're still both fascinating times for me. So I was like, I want to complete this. I want to understand this Extreme Studios. Like, you could see in the documentary how Liefeld could rub the wrong way on people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you're recruiting... You have this brotherhood in arms, and you're recruiting his artists behind their back.
Yeah.
That's dirty pool. And then he did other stuff. Like he said, well, I'll form this other company, Maxim, because he was Maximum, which at the same time he was at Image, and they're like, what the hell? You're competing with our own line, your own line. And it's just weird stuff that he was doing. Like, I think if he had a different personality, more like Jim Lee or Todd or Eric, he'd be in a different spot than he is today. You know what I mean? He'd have more He'd have more work under his belt. He'd have more things to look at. He'd have more creations. But he's already a millionaire for what he's done. You know, his whole thing was, I'm going to create a boatload of characters, like, all at once. Like, when he came to New Mutants, that's what he did. And he did create, you know, Cable, Deadpool, a slew of others. I mean, it was, like, tons of characters. Well, he did the same thing in Youngblood. And you can always find the correlation between the characters. But anyway, this Youngblood, I don't remember it. So I was in the middle of a story arc where a guy called Darkthorn had possessed Badrock, and Shaft and his team were, you know, they had like Wildmane. He looked like a Wolverine character. He had the hair. Yeah. They had Wildmane and his berserkers trying to hold him down, and then they had these huge characters called Brahma and Gray, and they were just muscle bound dudes, like Badrock, you know, trying to tame Badrock. And then you had Chapel. Chapel was one of the big. You had Sentinel, and I can't remember this one guy's name, but he looked really cool at the time that he actually, he looked like Wave Rider, kind of like a Firestorm character. And then they had Cougar and a bunch of other ones. And this was pretty much an issue where they were trying to to get. Oh, this is awesome! And this is Rob Liefeld liking Jack Kirby. They have a character called Kirby, and he's a guy that smokes cigars. He looks like Jack Kirby. Like he looks like he could be Jack Kirby, and he just carries this big gun around. And he was hanging around with Prophet at the time, and they had Die Hard. So they actually, this whole issue was them getting control of Badrock, you know, from that villain, and they eventually did. So it was an interesting, just to revisit the art style and what this was, and to see Kirby, the Kirby character. I thought it was great.
That's cool.
And then the Brigade number 4 on the back, that was a more interesting story. That was Battlestone. They were like brothers, Battlestone and the other guy who was in Bloodstrike. So they had a Bloodstrike book and a Brigade book, and they had two characters that looked very similar. This one is the character with the skull on his head. He looks like a Cable character. But they're in space, and they're with these characters like the Birds of Prey. They were the Birds of Prey before the Birds of Prey came about, I think. But they were fighting this other villain who was Genocide and the Lord Magistrate in space. And it was the Death of Atlas, which it appears like, I don't remember this character Atlas, but man, the fans didn't like him. They were like, I was reading the letters page, and they were like, you know, we love your book and all, but you ought to kill this guy Atlas because he's a jerk. and that's what they did this issue. They killed a Atlas. So this was them actually trying to get back to Earth, and they did get back to Earth with the sacrifice of the one leader from the Birds of Prey. But cool. Yeah, it was interesting. The next book that I'm going to talk about though later is Youngblood by Alan Moore, and that's much better.
Go figure.
Yeah. All right, so let's get to another question. This one's Martin, and this is a question that we're going back and forth with on Geek Brunch about technology. He asked what device we use to record this episode, because we don't use the fancy technology that he does. He uses like this MP4 recorder, and then he strips out the video.
You have a reel to reel.
I have reel to reel, man. Mm-hmm. That's right. I don't need all that Alexa bullshit. We'll see who's around podcasting when the world goes to pot in a post-apocalyptic event.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I'm on mute a lot is because I'm actually chiseling everything that we say into a stone tablet.
And that's going to last forever.
That's going to last forever. Mm-hmm. When his hard drive's removed, he's lost all his show notes. They're all gone. We have a rock.
Exactly. If it was good enough for Moses, it's good enough for us.
Yep.
So let me see what the other.
Ironically, my recorder stopped recording as I was saying that.
Did it really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
So I was like, "Oh, you don't need me."
Goodbye.
Start it back up, just in case.
I am. Yeah.
And then he said, also, any chance you guys talk about Iron Fist this week? I know Mike won't be watching it for a while, but I'm sure he's read the books. Who do you think wrote the Iron Fist the best? Claremont, Brubaker, Fraction, Andrews, others that are the wrong answer. I think he's poking at me because I don't watch the TV shows when they come out. Like, I am so behind it. And in fact, I don't really give a shit because TV is like my third priority. And the only reason I even watch what I watch is because I need something to do when I'm exercising. And I can't exercise and read at the same time for some reason. Like, I know some people who could get on the elliptical or the treadmill and they can read. I can't do it.
I think it would give me a headache if I tried.
Yeah, I'm bouncing around too much. My head's moving too much, and I'm too old for that shit. So I like watch TV during the time. But I haven't even gotten through Jessica Jones. Not because it's not good. It's just because my TV watching time is like 1 hour a night, and I have to choose. I record like, I don't know, 20 shows a week, and I have to choose what to watch. So a lot of competition. Yeah,
I have watched I don't know actually what order it is, but I know the only one that I haven't seen yet. Well, I haven't watched Luke Cage yet, and so I haven't seen Iron Fist either.
I'm
watching them in order. So isn't it?
Yeah, me too.
Isn't it Jessica Jones and then Daredevil season 2 and then Luke Cage?
Yeah, I think you're right. So yeah, I've watched Daredevil season 2. I've watched Jessica Jones, but I haven't watched these last couple.
I'm between you two guys. I've watched Daredevil season 1, Jessica Jones, and half of Daredevil season 2. But I'm also kind of like you, Mike, in that it's a funny thing is when the more superhero TV and movies that we get, the less I care about them. Like the more choosy I get. Like, it used to be there were so few that I got excited about anything that came out, but now there's so many that I'm like, well, I'm excited about Wonder Woman, but, you know, I don't really care. Like, I still want to watch them all, but I've gotten to where I watch a lot of the movies.
I watch
a lot of movies on Blu-ray now, and the TV shows I just don't even try to keep up with anymore. It's just too many.
I ranked my forms of entertainment, and number one is comics. Like,
yeah,
and I have them all around, so I see them everywhere. So that'll occupy the majority of my time. Number two is movies, and movies for me are going to the movies. So like, I'll go every Saturday to a movie. Usually, go see Get Out, Rob. You're gonna love it.
Yeah.
No, I know you're gonna love it.
I listened to the Nerdist podcast with Jordan Peele, and it definitely they talked a lot about it. I mean, not they didn't give anything away, they didn't spoil anything.
Don't let them spoil it for you, because I mean they give you the premise in the trailer, but there is a hook to it.
Okay.
So try to see that without getting spoiled if you can do it.
Yeah, definitely planning on it.
What the hell were we talking about? Iron Fist.
I haven't read a whole lot of Iron Fist stuff. I don't really have an opinion on the different writers.
Yeah, I've read probably who was the first one to kind of relaunch it maybe 10 years ago? Was
John
it Brubaker?
John Byrne relaunched it.
John Byrne relaunched?
Ed Brubaker and then Matt Fraction.
Okay, then I think I probably, I don't remember who it was, but anyhow, I didn't read much of it, so I don't really have much of an opinion about solo Iron Fist stuff. Most of my Iron Fist that I've read was with Power Man.
Yeah.
Well, I think he's including that because isn't that what he's talking about when he says Claremont?
I think he's talking about the Iron Fist first volume.
And yeah, I think so too. Because Claremont wrote all of that.
That's my favorite volume. Okay. It's.
And I've never read any of it.
It's Chris Claremont and John Byrne, and I own almost that full run. I got the expensive issues. I got 14, which is the first appearance of Sabretooth, 15, which is the versus the X-Men. I think I'm missing 11, and that's it. I have a full run of that. That could be my favorite run, but the right answer to this question is Power Man and Iron Fist. None of the above. Power Man and Iron Fist is the best, in my opinion. Iron Fist, and it's because he works so well with Luke. Like, they work together really well as characters. They're like light and day, but they have a mixture about them that is really cool. Like the Heroes for Hire concept and such. That is my favorite, but. I like the Kari Andrews. Kari Andrews on art is he's doing the Renato Jones stuff right now. His style is very polarizing, in my opinion, but it works for me. It works for my eyeballs, and I like what he did. And then, of course, you know, the Matt Fraction stuff, which is the most popular. I enjoyed that as well, but it's nowhere near the nostalgia or what I like to read is when there were Power Man and Iron Fist, and I have a full run of that too. So, and he said anything else is wrong. What about Iron Fist season 2, which was by James Felder and Robert Brown? You didn't mention them. What the hell?
I don't even know who those people are.
Or what about Dan Jurgens and Butch Geis?
Yeah,
with
Inker
Scott
Koblish.
What about that? You didn't mention that.
Probably because they only lasted 3 issues.
I think it was the intent, though, of those.
Well, yeah, it was a miniseries, right? I mean, yeah. They did a lot of miniseries.
What about James Maloney? I don't even know how to pronounce it. And Kevin Lau. Yeah.
I bought, like, I'm going through all these as you're mentioning them, and I have, like, the first issue of, like, all of, like, most of them, but apparently I think I like the idea of Iron Fist more than, like, the actual stories, because I keep buying the first issue, and I don't seem to buy any of the issues.
I'm surprised you didn't like the Fraction Ed Brubaker stuff.
I've got the first 6 issues of.
Yeah, but there must have been something that turned you off because.
Yeah, I don't know what it was because I just bought that.
You usually give them 3 issues or more. You know what I mean? And then you say to hell with it.
Yeah. Don't know.
I'm starting to feel out of place because I don't have my database hanging out.
I know. So you got to. Just look. Pull up your own database. You got. What do you use?
Collectors. Comics, comics, collectors.
Pull that thing up.
Like Easy Paths.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, we were doing a question. All right.
Yeah, and then
I think we're done.
Immortal Iron Fist and.
Yeah,
the Living Weapon.
They got a Living Weapon and all that stuff.
Lots of prefixes and suffixes.
I didn't even know the Iron Fist Netflix series came out until I saw Martin saying, "Don't tell me that it's bad. I already know that I'm going to love it," or something like that. I'm like, oh, I didn't even know that it was.
I don't disagree with that. I won't like it. I just don't have time for that. Like, I don't, you have these guys that been watched because they feel like they have to see everything like right away. I don't feel that way.
I just don't have time.
Yeah. The only thing that I watch like, within 2 or 3 days of its release are Walking Dead and Riverdale. Mm-hmm. But Walking Dead is more so I don't get spoiled. Riverdale is because I just love Jughead. I think he's awesome. But
I was talking to my wife about Riverdale, and I said to her, I'm like, you know what? I said, if this was not situated in the Archie universe, I'm like, I don't think I would care about this TV show at all. But as it is, I love it.
Well, you know what I think it is because I think they juggle what the core of the character is really well with a modern sensibility and a Twin Peaks vibe. Do you know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Yeah, I do.
They're not detaching from the core of what the character is. They're there. They're just morphing them into a darker place.
Right.
Just like Afterlife with Archie. It's very similar. And I like it. You know, I really, really like it.
But I think it's funny for myself that I know that if these were just created characters specifically for a TV show and they didn't have the history of that, you know, Archie and stuff, and they were just regular, like no-name characters that it just came out with, and it wasn't called Riverdale. It was called some other town that you've never heard of. I would never, ever watch the show.
Well, but I'm glad I agree. I do. It's yeah, great. I would agree with you 100%. If it wasn't Riverdale, I wouldn't watch it. And it's for the same reason. My time is limited. I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
Like for me, man, it goes like this. One, comic books, and that's like 80% of my entertainment. Two, movies. Three, TV. And video games is like way the fuck out there. Like it's like, whoosh.
Oh, I didn't know you played video games at all.
Well, he doesn't.
If you're not talking about Atari 2600 or ColecoVision, then I say fuck it. I'm not gonna.
It's essentially not on your list.
It's not on my list.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That. I mean, I'm the same way. But I'm not opposed to playing some video games, but I just don't have the time. I think that I will probably play some when the kids get older and they're in the video game age. And I'll be playing with them, and I'll be enjoying it.
But. Well, you know, we have this place called Woodland Park. It's about, I don't know, 20 miles away, 28 miles away from here. And they have, like, a classic arcade. Like, I could play Donkey Kong and, like, Zaxxon and Tron. That's my world. You put me in this, like, Call of Duty bullshit. You know, I just have no interest in that. Halo, you know, I just like any modern-day first-person shooter, I just don't care. But you put, like, Galaxian or any of those games like Zaxxon or Space Invaders or Asteroids or Missile Command, you put those in front of me, I'll play them for hours.
Very nice.
So I'm very retro when it comes to games.
Yeah, you are.
Unless it's sports. If you put Madden in front of me and you put somebody next to me that wants to play Madden, I will shit on you. I know all the – I, like, know what plays to call.
I'm going to strike playing games with you off the list. I don't want to be shit on.
I'm highly addicted and competitive to sports games. I had a coworker – and that's all we do, and I get like 2 hours of sleep because it would be like, okay, I'd win one game, and then he'd go, no, one more, and then he'd win, and then he'd go, one more, and by the time he knew it was time to go to work. And you're like, holy shit.
I'm not into that, like, what do you call it, Howard Johnson's, or what do you call it when you take a dump on somebody?
Cleveland Steamer.
Yeah.
Howard Johnson's. That's a hotel chain, man.
I like that. I like that. I've never heard.
It's a baseball player, too.
I like that.
Well, Howard Johnson is
he used to play for the Mets.
That's a new term for when you're playing video games and you want to shit on your guy you're playing against.
Get that trending.
When you win and then you just drop your pants.
I will shit on you.
How do you like that?
I used to love to play with my teams, like Buffalo Bills or Green Bay. And I would, like, know all the plays to do. And my friend would just pick whoever was the strongest team. So he'd go, oh, 90% offense. And I would just get me so mad. But I was still, like, know the strengths and weaknesses of my teams to still beat him. And I remember the one time I beat him in one game, and he literally picked up the whole console and almost broke it. I got him so mad.
Jeez.
Yikes.
Yeah. All right, so back to the comics.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. I've got Justice League of America number 151. It's a giant size issue. And in this one, the ladies of the Justice League are stuck on monitor duty, Black Canary, Wonder Woman, and Hawkgirl. And somehow something goes, some sort of energy goes through the window of the satellite headquarters and hits Wonder Woman and zaps her. And then her eyes are just kind of glowing and she's ignoring everyone. Just, and I mean, she's talking to them, but she's like, oh, I forgot I have something to do. And she says goodbye and she leaves. The reason why they're stuck with monitor duty is because all of the men are somewhere else in the satellite in the conference room. And they are giving the Atom a bachelor party because he's going to be getting married.
Well, I love the cover to this. That's great.
It's cool, right?
Well, I love Wonder Woman covers, and this is a bondage Wonder Woman cover.
Yeah, so the two ladies, Black Canary and Hawkgirl, go and interrupt the men because they're like, we think that there's something wrong with Wonder Woman. And they don't want to hear anything about it. They basically tell them that they're like, you know, why are you interrupting our party? You're not supposed to be here. So they decide to try to figure out what's going on their own. Well, it turns out that Wonder Woman has been hypnotized and captured by Amos Fortune, who the name sounded familiar, but I don't remember ever seeing anything with him. But apparently he's already had battled the JLA like four times before this.
He's a big villain.
Yeah, the name, like I said, is familiar to me, but I don't think I ever saw him. He doesn't look very formidable.
Amos Fortune is often teamed up with the guy who created Amazo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But as you said, Mike,
Professor
like
Ivo,
the cover,
right?
Yeah, Ivo.
Ivo and Amos have teamed up a lot.
He's got her chained up in front of his Wheel of Fortune, and he's discovered that because she alone among the Justice League has her powers based in magic, that if he can, he's got this like this elaborate setup. He's got his Wheel of Fortune, a candle, a magnifier. Basically, when he spins the Wheel of Fortune counterclockwise, this beam goes through Wonder Woman, and because she's magic, it splits into seven different colors, as you see on the cover, Mike.
Yeah.
And it goes across the world to these seven individuals who he's determined are the world's luckiest mortals. And it basically overloads their luck. And what it has done is it's imbued them with the ability to bestow other people with powers. So they don't have powers themselves, but they can bestow other people powers. So he gathers them to bestow the other like random people with powers that he has. He then has them stealing things and so forth. So it turns out what's going on is it's actually taking away powers from the Justice League members. So, for instance, for a second, Black Canary feels like she's choking and she can't talk. And then a few moments later, she's okay. Well, it turns out that somebody else has stolen some power. The same way with Superman. He's like suddenly can't lift a plane and he needs help to stay conscious because somebody else has stolen some of his powers. So this is going on where the Justice League goes and they're trying to do these different things and they're losing their powers. And then these individuals that have been bestowed part of their powers are defeating them one by one, or rather two by two as they're teaming up. And suddenly Wonder Woman has been waiting patiently. She says she had to wait 7 hours if she can manage to, if everyone else can manage to live that long. And then that's when the sun comes up and the sun starts hitting her tiara. She starts talking to Amos Fortune and manages to hypnotize him with the star on her on the top of her tiara. So the next thing you see is Green Lantern and Green Arrow and Adam trying to beat some of these individuals that have the power. And as they kind of knock the Adam over, and it knocks some consoles, and on the other side of the console goes right through a building. On the other side of the building are the two people that were bestowing the powers onto these random individuals, and it collapses. And then, sure enough, one by one, all of them start running into bad luck. All of these people that previously were the world's luckiest mortals are running into bad luck. And they end up defeating everyone and capturing Amos Fortune. And what Wonder Woman explains is that, here, let me just read this one part. They had Superman and Batman had been beaten by previously. And Superman ends up saying, "Strangest thing, when Batman and I regained consciousness, our attackers had managed to lock themselves in a plane without fuel. Capturing them was pure luck." And Hawkgirl says, "The same for us, and I have a feeling Wonder Woman knows why." And Wonder Woman says, "Using reflected sunlight, I hypnotized Fortune, something I'd waited 7 hours to do. Then I commanded him to spin his Wheel of Fortune, not counterclockwise, as he did to give his villains good luck, but clockwise. That gave them bad luck, you might say super bad." So by doing it that way, she bestowed bad luck to all of these people, enabling the superheroes to defeat them. And at the very, very end, you have Ollie, who had kicked the ladies out of the bachelor party, coming up to Dinah and apologizing to her. So it was kind of a silly, goofy story, but it was actually a lot of fun to read, to see, Wonder Woman turning the tables on Amos Fortune by hypnotizing him and getting him to use his Wheel of Fortune in reverse. Obviously, kind of silly and absurd, but it was fun nonetheless. And I love these old Justice League stories. Before I started collecting X-Men, Justice League was my thing.
It's my favorite time period is the satellite era.
Oh my God, that was it for growing up. They were in the satellite and stuff, and it was just early on, before I was a real trying to get old X-Men, I managed to get Justice League 200 and up, and which wasn't that many issues, but now I have very, very few that I would need to get like 100 and up. Maybe someday I'll have all of them, because I'll never get Brave and the Bold, 28.
Yeah, I'll never get those, or maybe the early issues, but like I'm only missing like 91, 86, 76, 74, 73.
So you have most of them.
57.
Yeah.
45, 43, 35, 32, 25, 22, 23, number 18, number 13, number 9, and then almost 1 through 9, except I have issue 3.
Wow, Mike. So, looking at these now, like, I'm not going to, I'm never going to get JLA.
But
I might get 10, 11 and up, I might be able to get at some point.
Other than that, I own every single volume of Justice League since then,
Wow.
And every incarnation, like every off quarterlies, I think I might have been missing some annuals, but that's been fixed. That shipment's on its way.
I'm looking at mine. It looks like I've got 168 and up, and then only like two or three that I'm missing between that and 150. I probably still need a good 15 more issues to be able to say that I have 100 and up. but maybe 15 to 20 issues. So, you know, I still have some work on those, but they're not terribly expensive. So if I want to dedicate myself to that, I'd be able to at least go low into maybe, you know, as far down as maybe, you know, 10 or 20. One through 10 are pretty, you know, pretty pricey if I really want to spend the money. So,
yeah, I think I'll get from 10 up.
Yeah, and that's
then,
what I'm thinking.
And then only if the situation arises where something comes up, like a good deal.
Yeah.
Like at the comic shop at 50% off or something like that, then I'd probably I'd consider it, you know.
I mean, I could get.
And it has to be less than. For me to even consider it, has to be less than $2,000, and like number one is like $6,500. I mean, at a very conservative price.
Yeah, and I'm changing it to good, and it says that that's still $2,000. So you could maybe someday get number one in that condition. Who knows?
Like I have the Brave and the Bolds for the Titans, but I don't have the Justice League for sure.
Well, that's got to be really I don't have it up in front of me, but that's got to be really expensive.
Yeah, I got a good honking Brave and the Bold run.
I love Brave and the Bold.
Yeah, it's it is close to.
Did you say a good honk?
A good honk, yeah.
A honk.
It's not quite chunk. It's a little bit better than a chunk.
Oh, okay.
It's a honk.
I gotcha.
It's a science.
The next thing I'm trying to do though is get the Captain America series, you know, the Stan Lee Jack Kirby, all the way through, and I'm really only missing maybe 20 issues to have everything, and I have the most expensive ones. I've got 100 to 107.
Yeah, you're more strategic, and I wish I had that, but I'm more of the squirrel guy. Like I lose track of where I was and get redirected, and like I have 100 through, I don't know. Like, I have all that stuff.
So you have the expensive stuff.
I have 100 through 108, and then I need a good chunk from 109 to something else.
But
it is on my
196
list.
Up, and then a lot of the other stuff. So I really only needed, like, 20 issues. So I'll get there at some point. My dream would be to get Avengers 4 someday, but I don't know at this point if I'll ever end up doing that. 10 years ago, I would say, yeah, I'm going to get that in like seven, you know, like a fine, very fine. But now with the kids and stuff, I can't see myself spending that much money ever again on one comic book.
Yeah. See, I want to do the Cap thing because of Mark Grenwald. He was my writer, but I have everything from Grenwald up.
Yeah.
I just want to, I'd like to complete it someday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the Ghostwriter kick on the Marvel side.
Are you?
I'm working on that, and then Chris got me on the Punisher, but I was a little more focused on it. Like, me and Bill are gonna cover the Eric Larson issues. Me and Bill are both gonna read the Spawn Eric Larson issues and the Punisher Eric Larson issues for Geek Brothers.
Oh, nice. So, very cool.
Yeah, so that'll be fun.
Hey, that's infringing on our territory.
He likes well, the Spawn isn't, because that was recent.
Right. I
know. Oh,
yeah.
I'm just kidding. I don't mind about that. That's fine.
Yeah. But me and Bill are both big fans of Eric Larson, so. I thought it'd be fun.
I just have a lot of respect for Eric Larson that, you know, he formed the company. I mean, they all kind of formed a company because they wanted to make their own creations and stuff. And it's fine. There's nothing wrong with what anyone else chose to do. You know, even Todd McFarlane, you know, was interested in toys and wanted to do that and stuff. And that's all great. And I just think there's a lot to be said that, you know, Eric Larson's like, I want to do comic books. And then he just kept doing comic books forever.
And he stuck it, you know? He stuck it.
Yeah, that's dedication, you know? It just shows that that's what he really was interested in, which is great. You know?
He's fascinating to watch draw, too, because he curls his wrist really weird. Like, I don't even know how he can draw. It doesn't look like a natural way to hold a pencil. It's very strange.
I haven't
strange.
Seen it. That's funny.
If you ever get a chance and he's doing a sketch, watch it. You'll see like a 2 second, maybe 3 second clip in that video. Concentrate when they show him.
Okay.
But when you're looking at him, don't look at him. Look at his wrist. It's like bent. It's like bent, and he like curls the pencil. It's weird.
I can picture in my head what you must be talking about. I have no idea how you draw like that.
Yeah. Yeah. If you finish watching that, look for it. I don't know if you've passed it and just didn't pay attention.
Didn't
or
pay
if
attention.
Yeah.
So I think I only have about half an hour, 40 minutes left.
You might see it.
I am only missing around 204 issues of Justice League of America.
Well, that's not bad at all.
Including 1 through 100.
Well,
my copy. I think somebody Howard Johnson'd my copy of 101 though. That one's looking pretty rough. I think it played. I think it played Madden with Mike at one point.
And Howard Johnson. Yeah.
Well, Chris, when the Comic-Con rolls around again, then you know we know what to do. We'll start buying you some old JLAs.
There you go. Say that again. And say I instead of we.
No. Money for that.
I'm gonna title this episode Howard Johnson.
Oh yeah.
There you go. We'll probably
that'll pique everyone's interest. What are they talking about?
All right.
Well, let me ring the bell. Bing.
Is that a Howard Johnson thing?
It's a Martin thing. Usually gets the episode title and then he goes, ding! He has a bell, like a hotel bell.
Gotcha. I'm just kidding. I listen to that podcast all the time.
Nerdy Legion.
I actually am super behind on podcasts, the ones that I already listen to. So, all right, I'm just going to do really quickly because I read Spider-Woman number 50. Oh. And this is the volume one where it's the photo cover. And it's actually Ann Nocenti is the writer, and Ann Nocenti is the woman that is wearing the Spider-Woman a costume on the front.
I had no idea that was her.
Yeah, that's her. And actually, like,
that's
in the background.
Her?
Yep.
Wasn't that something?
That's her.
I actually talk to her a lot, like on Facebook every now and then, because I like her writing. Like, I liked what she did when she came to New 52 with Clarion the Witch Boy and stuff. Like, I got hooked into like what she was trying to accomplish.
Right.
With Catwoman too. So I like.
Yeah.
I like her style. Like she's cool. I like her as a person.
Yeah, she definitely has a different style. Goes for some different things than other writers do. You can kind of see that in this too. Like, the rest of the creative team is Brian Postman as the penciler, Sam De La Rosa inker, Andy Yankus. This is the colorist.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really know those names. Brian Postman sounds kind of familiar. But I believe Ann Nocenti was just like brought on for the last maybe 4 issues of this series. They knew that they were going to cancel it.
Before her shirt Daredevil run or after?
I think it would be before. This is 1983. I think Daredevil's like mid-80s.
Yeah, late 90s maybe.
Mid-80s, early 90s.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so, apparently, though, they did try to wrap up some plot lines from earlier in the series and stuff, because it's kind of funny. I've never read any issue of Spider-Woman Volume 1, and I'm just reading issue 50. But
did you watch the cartoon back in the day?
Nope.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
But I just have known about this issue partially because of the cover. I think I read about it in Back Issue Magazine or something, and I saw this. I got this. This is a physical copy. I got this out of a 50-cent bin. And so it's a pretty interesting issue. It almost has like two halves to it, although it's one continuous story. The first part is Jessica Drake dealing with some dreams, and then she's also, I guess, in previous issues, it sounds like both enemies she's gone up against and like friends of hers and stuff have disappeared, and then she herself disappears out of the shower, it turns out that this guy called the locksmith is responsible for both her disappearing and also like the other people that have disappeared, which are the only one I really recognized was Tigra, but then there's also some like really, I mean, there's a werewolf, the werewolf, but then there's also Daddy Longlegs, Gypsy Moth, and Poltergeist.
Why do people say Tigra? I always say Tigra.
Tigra.
What do you say, Rob? Tigra.
I say both, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. As a little kid first seeing it, I just said yeah. Tigra.
No, but Chris isn't the first person I've heard say Tigra.
No, me neither. Yeah, I'm the same way as you. I've heard other people say Tigra.
I just wanted to sound fancy. Like, after the podcast, I'm going to go shop at Target.
You know what Target does now? This is an interesting fact.
What?
They do those three-pack comic things. They sell comics.
They do not.
I swear to you.
Must be a Colorado thing.
And they've been selling them out here. It's weird because they'll have, like, they'll have an issue of Marvel Fanfare and like.
What do you mean? They're old comic books?
Yeah. And they're in a 3-pack.
Oh, geez. If I see any of those, I'm buying them in a second.
I'll buy you some. Do you want some?
Sure.
They've been selling all right. They're only $5.99 for 3 comics, but.
Wow.
I've been surprised because I saw Target doing it about 6 months ago, and then I said, you know what? I'm going to watch to see if these sell. And they've been selling. Like, they have different books there every time I go.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I haven't seen that since I was a kid.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it here, at least the one that I go to.
I haven't.
I know it's
what,
like
in
what
certain section are they selling?
It's like where they have, like, the Tiny Titans characters and some of the more obscure toys.
Like in the toy section then?
Yeah, it's in the toy section.
Uh-huh.
But it's not like with the... It's not during the like major action figures. It's not with the Star Wars. It's not with the Marvel and DC stuff. It's like the next row that's like the really weird stuff. You might have a row of Hot Wheels and then this weird panel of obscure toys, and there's comics.
Maybe we do have them then, because I don't usually go down there.
I'm gonna have to take a look.
Yeah, I'll take a picture next time I'm there. Right. Matter of fact, I was on one of the Facebook forums. It was like DC Comics. I can't remember what it was, or Comics in the 80s or something like that. Mm-hmm. And someone was like, "I see this at my Target," and then like everybody's like, "Where do you find them? I want these things."
Yeah.
How much do they cost? And I at least
But if they're $6 for 3 comics, they're probably like 50-cent bin comics.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean,
probably.
I think it's the nostalgia thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what? Rob, I'll go to Dave and Adams. I'll buy 3 50-cent comics. I'll wrap
randomly,
them in a bag for you.
Randomly.
I'll even do them randomly. I won't look at what I'm grabbing. I'll wrap them in a bag for you, and then you can give me $6 for it.
That is not You know, I was just, not to totally derail now your coverage of Spider-Man, but I was just there like 2 weeks ago. They've really pulled like anything that was mildly interesting to me right off of their 50-cent bins or boxes, I should say. Like, everything was just,
well, they
much more recent or like stuff that was like totally like not I mean, I don't even know that they're worth 50 cents.
Yeah, they have people that they call when they put out new stuff, and then and one of them is the guy, is a retailer. I think it's the guy that you bought a couple key issues off of last year.
That guy, right? Yeah.
He's one of them that they call, and they come and pick through everything. And like he buys like a long box at a time of like all the good stuff, like right when they put it out. So that's a big part of it.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. But anyway, Spider-Woman, yeah, like the first half is about this locksmith guy, and his whole deal is that he resents the fact that superheroes have drawn attention away from him. Like, he used to be an escape artist, and then once superheroes came around, no one really cared about or was impressed with his illusions. And so that's why he's pissed off, and that's why he's locked up. Like, he's got Spider-Woman, he's got all these like Z-list villains, and as well as Tigra, and meaning I'm exempting her from Z-list status, in case everyone's, you know, just to clarify that. But you also have like the Flying Tiger, the Enforcement, or the Enforcer, Hangman, Shroud. I've heard of the Shroud before.
Mm-hmm, me too.
Daddy Long Legs. But so eventually they come up with a plan, like mostly Spider-Woman and Tigra are responsible for breaking everybody out. And it's funny because Jessica invites everybody, including the villains, back to her apartment for a party afterwards. And everyone's acting pretty nice, although the Shroud looks kind of grumpy, sitting on the couch there with his arms folded. So even though the issue continues, because it's, I think it's like double sized.
Yeah, this is the final issue of this.
Right. Run. Yeah. It almost kind of transitions into a different story after that, even though it there's no break. And it's kind of this weird scene, which is kind of like reminds me of like Innocenti's kind of how she comes up with kind of different stuff. During the party, or like kind of as the party's winding down, Jessica goes out back to talk to this guy that's her boyfriend at the time. And they have this weird conversation where he's kind of basically breaking things off with her. But then he suddenly gets possessed by Magnus, who's a sorcerer. And I guess this goes back to like an earlier issue in the series, that a plot line that was dropped and never continued, like something like issue 17 or something like that. And he tells her he's taken over her friend's form so she can speak to him, or to speak to her. And tells her that Morgan Le Fay wants to drive Jessica insane. And so she's sending illusions forward in time to make Jessica crazy. And like before this, she's seen like some weird visions and stuff like that. Mm. And that's from Morgan Le Fay. So he tells her, we've got to travel in astral form. She's like, I can't do that. He's like, oh, no problem. I can help you do that. And so they take off in their astral forms. Magnus makes a rift between time and space. And they go back in time to the 6th century. So that Jessica can act in that time period, she takes the form of she possesses the body of this peasant girl. She's like reluctant to do that, but she ends up doing so because the woman is about to get trampled by a horse, so she would have died if Jessica didn't take control of her body. And then Magnus uses his powers to make her still look like Spider-Woman. So basically so that they can continue to have Spider-Woman drawn like Spider-Woman in the rest of the issue, I guess. But anyway, she confronts Morgan Le Fay in the 6th century. There's like a lot of like spiritual stuff happening. Like they battle things out, and quite a few pages, there's twists and turns in terms of their battle. But eventually, Morgan is defeated. Magnus takes her back to the present. Jessica's gotten used to the whole astral form thing. She's like, right before I enter my body, I am going to, she does one last backflip. She feels great. What a victory, never to face Morgan again. Hi there, body. You look pretty gloomy without me, your little old spirit to illuminate you. But then she screams when she tries to enter her body again. And it turns out that she's dead. Her body is dead. So she can't enter back into it. And Magnus in astral form like puts his hand on her astral shoulder. And it turns out that Morgan, it was her final act to snuff out the essence of Jessica's mortal form while she was out of it in her spirit. He's like, that's not so bad once you get used to it.
Jeez.
But she's like, well, my friends will be so sad. Can you do one last thing for me? Can you cast a spell so that no one will mourn me? I want them to be happy. Very well. So then there's a splash page of Jessica in her Spider-Woman costume in astral form, and like the heads of the different characters we've seen this issue, and like other supporting characters and other Marvel superheroes that she knows, like Hawkeye, Spider-Man, Angel, Iron Man, Storm, Nick Fury, Dazzler, and Magnus makes everyone forget that she ever existed. So he's like, okay, on the last page, it's time to go, Spider-Woman. I know. One last look. Goodbye, life. You were pretty good to me. Life is good, and then you die. I can accept that. Spirit realm, huh? Things I've never seen before? Like what? You'll see. And then it just says on the bottom of the page, with profound regret, we must announce this is the final issue of Spider-Woman. So she dies, and all memory of her is completely wiped out of existence.
Wow.
It's super brutal. And then of course, like, I think it was like a year later that they undid that and like apologized for making like it such a brutal ending. But it was a really long time, as you probably know, before she was back in costume again. It wasn't really till Bendis.
It wasn't even her, though. It was Julia Carpenter rather than Jessica.
Well,
there
were other Spider-Woman that came along. There were several, but Jessica Drew, she was a private eye in plain clothes, like in Wolverine and a couple other places. She showed up as a supporting character, but it wasn't, she wasn't back in costume as Spider-Woman until Bendis
2009,
brought her back.
Yeah.
So even though they did like walk back that brutal ending of her just being totally winked out of existence, it was a long time before she was like a traditional superhero again.
Wow, that's really interesting. And you know, I don't know. Have either? I'm looking at like the run, the 50 issue run. Have either one of you read much of this?
I have the whole thing. Yeah.
Have you? Did you read it all? Do you remember anything about it?
Yeah.
I
read it because I was big into the character because of the cartoon.
Was it good? I mean, I'm seeing Mark Wolfman, Mark Grunwald, Then Chris Claremont wrote it for quite a while, and then ended, you know, the last four issues of Ann Nocente. Was this good? Is it something I should read?
I don't know. You're a little more critical than I am.
But these are all great writers.
Yeah,
and
it's a good run. It's very much like Tone of Dazzler. If you like Dazzler, I don't know if you read that, but
Very little. But like,
it's the first appearance of Siren
showing up here.
Yeah,
this looks. All these writers, I love Wolfman, I love Grunewald, I love Claremont. I mean, these are all like some of my favorite writers of that time.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I should. I wonder if this is collected
Infantino
at all.
Carmen Infantino on art.
Yeah. I'm going to have to see if it's collected.
Eden, Steve Leo. It's got a showcase. I mean, what do you call it?
An epic?
Yeah. Not an epic.
Essential.
I'm going to have to get this.
That would be a good way to try it for cheap.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, yeah, it's black and white, but you see the art, you see the story.
Yeah, that's okay. I don't mind that. I'm gonna have to pick that up. That is crazy, guys. I've never read any of. I mean, I have one issue, just a random issue that I probably just saw at flea market somewhere.
Yeah, there's certain characters that I get everything of. Like, I have all the volumes of Spider-Woman.
Wow.
And they're all different. I mean, at least Volume 2 and Volume 3 are different characters.
Mm-hmm.
Although Volume 3 does have Jessica Drew and Julia Carpenter in it. And Julia Carpenter's just recently appeared... Was it in Spider-Man? Was it in the Clone Conspiracy? I think it's in the Clone Conspiracy. She's on a computer. Working for a secret organization.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, haven't they pretty much brought any... tangentially related spider character in history back at this point, I guess.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Except for Uncle Ben. They teased that, but they didn't actually do it.
they just can't do that.
Well, even the third volume, it was John Byrne and Bart Sears. I mean, it was cool. It was a good volume.
All right, I'm gonna have to look for this. Because I see that they got the Masterworks, but I'm not going to pay that much for
Masterworks. They're a lot for as many issues as you get.
Why are they so expensive?
$75. I mean, just
even if you get them at 50% off.
Yeah.
It's the premier of the premier. I mean, it's like super high quality paper.
But
like, I'd rather
super
have
high quality restoration.
Yeah.
Usually that's the first thing that they do. Like, so I think the restoration process is part of it. And then they spin that out and like make more money back by
epics
publishing
and
trades and
epics
and putting it on Comixology and Marvel Unlimited. And,
when Masterworks was $50, I thought that was too expensive, just at full price. But now it's $75. It's insane.
Yeah. Let's not forget that Michael Fleschner, he's no joke either. He was on it.
Yeah, you know, I'm not as familiar with that name.
Chris has read a lot of Fleschner. Matter of fact, you mentioned him earlier.
Right, yeah, I think it's Fleischer.
Yeah, Fleischer. Fleschner! I threw in an extra N.
Alright,
Fleischer sounds like something you do, like...
Krieger!
After you're
Seeger!
Done, after you're done with your Howard Seeger. Johnson, go.
I like train my brain now with Bob Seeger. Mm-hmm. Like
I can get the
Seeger.
Essential Spider-Woman Volume 1, which is some of her other stuff like Marvel Spotlight and 2-in-1, and then 1 through 25 for $11.47.
That's another book I completed recently, Marvel Spotlight.
And then Volume 2 I can get for like the lowest price is like $4.98. How can you beat that? Right?
Yeah,
essentials are pretty. They've stopped doing essentials, but you can still find a lot of them really cheap.
I don't have a problem with. I have all the X-Men essentials, even though I had the you know, I've got the singles just because it was. Oh, it's just easy to.
Oh, it's convenient. I want to revisit issue 109. I'll just pull it off the shelf and read it.
It was cheap. It was, you know, it's convenient. I mean, the other stuff is just a little bit more expensive.
All right.
This is intriguing me, though, so I think I'll have to pick these up. Thanks, Chris.
No problem.
See, he does that. He, like, drops a bomb, and then he leaves. He, like, boom.
Yep. I'm out.
Go spend money.
I spent 50 cents like, on, like, a obscure comic and don't bother collecting any of the rest of them and just, like, and then make you guys check your databases.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because I'm looking at this, like, all these creators sound great, so. Interesting.
No, I'm kind of curious about it too. I might go the same route as you. Like, I just bought some Essential Defenders for the same reason, because you can't, like, I mean, they've started to do a Defenders Epic Collection, but, like, they're doing the ones that they never collected in the Essentials, because there were 4 volumes of the Essential Defenders. And then the Epic Collection that they put out picks up after volume 4 of...
Yeah, I'm really worried about the Defenders Epic line.
Yeah, then they're putting out another one this year, which comes after the
one they
put out.
Do you know what it is? Oh, it's the one after following
yeah,
the current one?
It follows
like
right after the one
volume 3
that...
or volume 4. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. Whatever volume that they put out, they're putting out the next one after that, because that stuff hasn't even ever been
I know they just released the masterworks of Defenders because I bought them. But
I tend to just like masterworks.
I don't buy masterworks because of the cost, but I did for the champions and I did for the Defenders.
See, this is where I would actually buy something digitally if there were more masterworks available. But the Spider-Woman Masterworks, I'm only seeing a volume 1, which means that it's got those 2 first issues and then just 1 through 8 of Spider-Woman, because it's only 10 issues. And the Comixology version is only $10. So I would actually get that if I could get more than just the first 8 issues of the run. But it's just not worth it. And I just have that and nothing else.
I can't believe that line's still around.
Me neither.
That's why I respect Marvel's like collected editions. They actually follow through with stuff. Gives you hope for the Epic collections, because they're still doing masterworks, you know.
Yeah.
But
I'm all in on the Epic collections, so they keep pumping them out. It's just more money to spend. The latest one that just came out was Excalibur Volume 1. So they just released New Mutants Volume 1, Excalibur Volume 1, and I can't remember the other one. Is that X-Force?
X-Factor, maybe?
X-Factor. There you go. X-Factor.
I think both. I know they're doing some X-Factor and X-Force.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I'll get the Essentials.
I would get more Epic Collections if it wasn't for Marvel Unlimited. I'd rather read them in the Epic Collection format, because I just think they're like the perfect size. And
the cost is kind of high, though.
It's
not high for what you get. You get a lot You get a lot of issues. You get a nice paper. I am a fan of the paper that they use.
Right.
What kind of paper do they use? Because I don't have any of those.
It's like a it's not the glossy, but it's like a matte.
Okay. That's good to know.
The matte doesn't have that nasty glare off of it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes, and that's what I was wondering.
Like, if you're reading like next to a lamp at night, it just looks so good. I am not a fan of the gloss. Like,
me neither.
I am a fan of newsprint and the matte.
Well, because like if I'm reading, like you said, with a light shining on it, I have to keep like moving the angle of the comic just to be able to read everything.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool.
So,
Mike, you got another one?
Yeah, Youngblood. So, there's even interesting Youngblood stories that came out of this comic company called Arcade. So there was Image, there was Maximum, there was Awesome, and then there was Arcade. And Arcade was interesting because he got Mark Millar, Kurt Busiek, and Robert Kirkman to pen the issues. But they lasted about 1 issue or 2 issues. And if anybody can get me a copy of Youngblood Bloodsport number 2, it is a prototype bootleg from Wizard World Los Angeles. I would be willing to pay for it if you want to get rid of it, because I can't find it anywhere. But
which one is it?
Youngblood Bloodsport, number 2.
Number 2, I see it. The last thing on the thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like, I don't know what the hell he does. Like, he makes a company, comes out with one issue, and then leaves. I don't know. It's like, I gave up, and then I said, fuck it. I'm just going to get it for historical purposes. But this is Youngblood Volume 3, number 1. And I already read number 2, and I owned it. So this one, number 1, I didn't have. And this is Alan Moore. Alan Moore did a lot for Liefeld, mostly in the world of Supreme. And he did a crossover event called Judgment Day. And that one is available in trade, because that's how I read it. But this is Alan Moore and Steve Scrosci on pencils. And it opens up, like, they're in space, and there's, like, this S.H.I.E.L.D. organization, and they found this character, Blue Boy, that they brought him back. And he's got, like, this virus on him, or he has the ability to transform himself into other bodies. So it's almost like an alien-type story, because an alien can jump from body to body, and then what he does is he takes over the whole ship, destroys it, and he's jumping from body to body into stronger bodies as he goes along. And Shaft and his crew, at this time, it's Doc Rocket, who's like a speedster. There's Twilight, who's kind of like Domino, if you will.
She looks exactly like Domino.
Yeah, Domino. There's Suprema, who's kind of like Supergirl or the Superman, you know, type family. You know, Supreme is like Superman. So Suprema is like, there's Big Brother, who's kind of like, I would say a Sentinel in the Marvel Universe, where it's a little boy that controls the Sentinel. This guy's a guy that gets into this big robot. And then there's some guy on the team, and I don't even know if they name him in this book, but he's an important part of the book. But he's like Morph, you know, from the X-Men. Wasn't Morph originally an animated character, and then they brought him into the comics?
I'm not sure.
I think Morph started off in the animated series and then made his way over.
Mm-hmm.
But there's that character. So they get word from this that there's this entity that's destroying a certain part of the city, and they send Twilight after, thinking it's going to be an easy job. But what ends up happening is he takes over Twilight's body. And then Doc Rocket is like Flash. So she gets there and she's able to like contain the situation, because he can't transfer bodies into Doc Rocket. But then Suprema comes. It doesn't know what the hell's going on. Goes in there, not knowing that if she touches Twilight, the body will transfer into Suprema, and she's like the ultimate superhero. You know, how do you stop a Superman type character? You know, they send the robot guy, Big Brother, but he gets pretty much knocked out immediately. So he's in the Suprema. He's in the body, destroying everything in this city, and he's like, I'm not gonna ever leave bodies. This is like the perfect shell. But then that's where the Morph character comes in, and he morphs himself into Supreme, and he says, I'm far superior to you and all this stuff. And the entity goes to touch him, and he gets into the body, and that's where they trap him. They trap him in the Morph body, so now he's not in the Supreme body. So it's a really cool done-in-one issue, and I don't remember what happens in number 2 because it was so long ago. But,
why were there only 2 issues?
Why don't you ask Rob Liefeld?
I was gonna say, because it was published by a Rob Liefeld company.
All right. Yeah.
He's.
I thought maybe with Alan Moore that I didn't know if that's all he was doing was to like it was just a 2-part.
Yeah, you never know.
It's gonna be.
Honestly, you have Rob Liefeld and Alan Moore involved. There's who knows
Alan
what happened.
Moore did a lot for him, like in Supreme. Like he had a really good run.
Yeah.
And, like, what was coming out at this company doesn't have a big run. Like, they had Fighting America, American, which I have most of those. That's that Simon and Kirby creation.
Mm-hmm.
They had Kaboom, Scarlet Crush, The Coven, which was Jeff Loeb and Ian Churchill, and then Rejects, which I don't own, but I will at some point, Rob Liefeld and Jeff Loeb. So I don't think you'll ever, like, if you decide to go down the Youngblood path, you'll never get, like, a complete story.
Yeah, that's too bad.
You have to do it more for your love of nostalgia. Do you know what I mean?
The characters' costume designs on the cover,
mm-hmm.
I really like. Is Doc Rocket that girl with the pigtails?
Yeah, and if you like follow like Youngblood, like people discussing it, Doc Rocket mm-hmm. is like a favorite. Like,
yeah, she looks cool. Suprema looks awesome.
She's really cool. Shaft is always he's the Shaft, one that's yeah. always there. Do you know what I mean? In every incarnation of Youngblood, you have to have Shaft. And there is a new Youngblood series coming out.
Yeah, I didn't order it.
I did. As a matter of fact, I ordered the Liefeld cover.
Did you really?
But they have a Finch cover? They have a Finch cover too, and I might get that one as well.
I might add it. Isn't it on the new previews? Maybe I'll add it to my order.
Yeah. Yeah, it's on the latest. So if you want to jump on, now's the time because you get a good. I think it's a 50% discount.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. You're right.
Now's the time to jump in if you're a DCBS customer, because you try it and then you could just say, "Oh, could you add it to my list later?" After you, it'll probably be late because it's a Liefeld book. So you'll probably get issue two like 2 months later.
Like he has anything to do with it, though.
No, he doesn't. Plot maybe, you know.
Yeah. The cover doesn't look.
One thing that's really surprising, if you look at all this, you know, Liefeld's known for this Extreme Studios and stuff. Mm-hmm. Is I think he just did a lot of character creation and threw them over to other people.
Yeah.
And let them run with it. So, I mean, that's a good business strategy. Probably made him a lot of money.
Sure.
But, he's probably going to live off of Deadpool and Cable for the rest of his life, and he'll be well to do.
Yeah, but, how did he get any type of rights to that, being that it was a Marvel creation?
I don't know how, and I don't know. It would be an interesting back issue article. I would love for back issue to get into like the Image and the Valiant. Like mm-hmm. It just skirts the edge, because they. Back issue does explore like Long Halloween and stuff, so it does go farther, but I wish they would do more of the. They do independent like Eclipse and Kamiko and all the other companies, but I never see like Image and Valiant, and I wish they would have that.
Yeah, because they're more like. They kind of stay ahead earlier than that, mostly yeah. Bronze Age, 80 and 80s.
Yeah.
But that would be fascinating to learn some of that stuff.
I would love to be the guy who's questioning Liefeld, and not to be from a rude perspective, but just to learn what his business strategy was and why he did what he did. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and to know that
Marvel, like how he's making the money off of those properties.
Because you know Marvel doesn't pay people for that type of stuff.
Well, do you remember
to know that he's making money?
Do you remember when Marvel tried to get away from it? They made Deadpool like Agent X, and they made Cable something else.
I do. Now that you say that,
Soldier X. They did it.
I didn't
on
know
purpose.
That had anything to do with it. Yeah,
yes,
now
they did it from a licensing perspective, but the name brand meant something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It meant something. So yeah, he's still making cash. Plus the money he made if he was smart, and I think he is because he shows pictures of stuff like his mm-hmm. lifestyle. He's not living a poor lifestyle.
No.
Or a humble one. so he's got to be making bank off of stuff.
Well, I added Youngblood 1, the regular cover, because it's only $1.99, where the other ones are $2.39, to my order. So just to try it out, I'll try it. Yeah. See what I think.
I liked the Twilight character too. I thought she was interesting. She did That's seem cool. very Domino-esque, and she does seem to have like smoke bombs, kind of like I don't know if you saw DC Legends of Tomorrow, but they introduce Obsidian. The way they draw Twilight here, in like that black mist, when they introduce Obsidian in that title, he has that same black thing happening, you know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I actually, this is obviously not retro at all, but I wanted to ask if either one of you are watching that Justice League action cartoon.
I tried.
No, I didn't. I didn't realize it started.
Yeah.
I tried, but my DVR, for some reason, just not record them. I'm gonna have to delete it
really?
And try re-adding because they're like 10 minute
they're
episodes.
Only 15 minutes. Yeah, they're 15 minutes each. My God,
I hate that shit.
I know, but you have the last one was a trick or treat one, set in Halloween, and Kane introduces the story from the House of Mystery.
Oh, nice.
And it's got Batman, Dr. Fate, Zatanna, and Constantine teaming up, and I knew who it was, and my wife gave me a strange look because it doesn't look like the person. It just looks like a kid that's dressed like a cat for Halloween. And it's Clarion, the Witch Boy.
Witch Boy, nice.
So I'm like, they are going deep with these. There's always Batman, Superman, or Wonder Woman that is in every episode. Usually either Superman or Batman. But then they always have these other characters.
They have Booster, Captain Marvel, a bunch
of
other
ones. You know, extreme or obscure to one level or the other. Sometimes not that obscure, but this one was really kind of obscure if you're not a comic fan. And it was just so cool to see. And my wife, Stacey, she knows Kane in the House of Mystery because she read all the Sandman issues.
Yeah.
So she didn't even know that was like regular DC. I'm like, yeah, they published
Kane House and Abel, House of Mystery, and House of Secrets.
Yeah, exactly.
They're the two brothers.
She's like, yeah, I know them. She's like, I didn't know they were regular comic books. I thought.
And
that
then
they
there
were
was
just
the witch from the Witching Hour. They were the hosts of the books. They were the Crypt Keeper, if you will.
I definitely recommend trying to try it again because they're really. I mean, and it's. I actually like it because it's just a quick 15 minutes. I can just turn it on at any point and just watch one or watch. I actually watched two in a row yesterday.
Yeah.
So it's just nice to be able to do that really quickly, especially with 4-year-olds. I don't have to worry about like a longer.
Oh, that's got to be a great strategy for kids that have short attention spans. You know, like it's got to be like a perfect strategy for them.
Oh yeah, I can sit there and turn it on and actually hold both of even Allie's attention, even though she's not interested in it.
Yeah.
You know, it's short enough.
It's short enough. Yeah, it's short enough.
Yeah. That was cool.
Do you guys have any other books?
No. You know what? I've got my horror movies, but I think I'll do Rob's Attic of Terror next time around. We can talk about a couple of movies, but I know we've been recording for a while, so.
Yeah, I got to wrap up.
All right.
I mean, you guys can continue, but.
No, we could.
You got
we
anything could... else, Mike, or no?
I had one that I'll just briefly mention. The Shadow Strikes, number one. This is I recently bought all of them. This is a DC book. This is like DC's done the Shadow quite a bit, and I own the Shadow title, and I own the first volume, the second volume, and then this was the third volume. I didn't know. I didn't own, and now I own it. And it opens up with they're at the club and some guy gets his head cut off. And it's interesting because this is the 30s and they're in like a gentleman's club, like not a strip club. But what do they call those clubs where men used to hang out? I don't know, like a rich man's place to hang out and talk golf and talk shop.
No, I don't know. Gentleman's club is probably what I would. Probably
yeah.
say, but
Gentleman's
I don't know if
there's Club
a different
has
word.
A new connotation to it now.
Yeah.
but that's what it was at the time. And it's a mystery about trying to find out how this guy got his head cut off. And it's interesting because it's 1930s. This is before World War you know, World War II. And it's like our alliance with Russia, which is really interesting because of the current political connotations. And it's the Shadow using his men to try to solve this mystery. He has, like, all these agents that work for him. And one of them's Margot Lane, which is his girlfriend, and he's Lamont Cranston, and he's part of this millionaire club, if you will. And she gets, like, brainwashed by this, like, guy that brainwashes women. It's very bizarre, but it's interesting. The other interesting thing, just out of, it's written by Gerald Jones, and if you've been following current...
Is he the one that got into trouble?
Yes, he's the one that got into trouble. The art is by, what is his name? I'll have to look it up real quick just to mention it real quick. Because his art is amazing. Eduardo Barreto. And I've seen
his art Eduardo.
Before.
Yeah, he's done stuff for DC.
Oh, man. The paper on this is like a matte. It's not the gloss. And it just pops. It's really good art. I really, really like it. So, I'm glad I have this series. I got to actually add it to my inventory.
You just got the whole series just recently?
I think there's one issue that my comic shop didn't have, maybe one or two, but I have the whole thing, yeah.
Cool.
Yep, and that's it. So, wrap this guy up. Let me make sure my recorder is still recording.
Yeah, I'll discuss some recording. Of the recent horror movies that I did next time around. Maybe I'll open with that.
Yeah, open with it. I'd be interested to see.
Yeah, because I've been pretty steadily watching some, so we'll go through them next time.
All right. So you can reach us at Rob Krieger.
Yeah.
And by the way, thank you, Chris, for the association, because my brain always does it.
Yep.
It's like the Tigra and the Tiger thing, see?
That's right.
And you can reach me at Mike Myers Brunch. Chris is at MythMakingETC. Our webpage on Facebook is Geek Brunch Podcast. And the webpage is geekbrunchpodcast.com. And I don't know what else we have to say.
I think that's about it for me.
That's about it.
We talked a lot about...
Go stay at a Howard Johnson's.
Yeah. Well, if anybody wants Howard to Johnson. Play Madden football against me, I'll be glad to shit on you.
What an offer.
Yeah.
And with that, we say goodnight.
Yeah. Right. Good night, guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Have a good weekend. Bye.